The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Gentlemen, let's get down to business.
Can you dig it?
Gentlemen, welcome to the queue. Of course, my name is Mark Bland, and I want to welcome every single one of you to the best moderate liberal talk show west of the Mississippi, east of the Mississippi, hailing from the great state of Missouri, St. Louis, Missouri, the gateway to the west. And we appreciate every single one of you guys listening to the queue. We've got a huge show lined up for you today. Google is ruining people's lives. We are going to discuss that. Obama's selfie gate is ridiculous and out of control, but was the selfie uncalled for? We will discuss, as well as we have some BNN game on, game off, and letters from the listeners, as we always do every single week for you guys. But Bobby basically explained to me that earlier this week there was a situation that was going on, and a listener chimed in on a Boeing situation.
Correct.
And so Bobby, and so what we do is he said he had a gentleman by the name of Dave. Dave, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, thank you so much for joining us on the queue today, sir.
Hey, big fan of your show.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that heavily. So, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
Be my guest. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just commenting that it's kind of ridiculous to give a CEO who makes $21.1 million a year a $1.7 billion tax break at a point in time where we're actually cutting food stamps to, the less fortunate.
Well, yeah.
I know there's some fraud going throughout the welfare system, but I mean, if one kid goes hungry, then that's not good.
Well, fair enough. And like, here's what I want to do. I want Bobby, go ahead and explain to everybody, kind of tell everybody the story so we can discuss it with Dave a little bit more in depth.
All right. So basically the story is Boeing, the major company that produces almost 80% of the aircraft in the world, is looking to find a location for its new plant, for its new Boeing 777X aircraft, which will carry over 400 passengers. And Missouri has released an entitlement package for a new Boeing assembly plant, which would, like Dave said, give Boeing a $1.7 billion tax cut over the next two decades. And the Senate has passed...
So it's a tax break is basically what it is.
Correct. The Senate has passed 23-8, a vote in a special session to send the measure to the House, where a final approval could come here soon about this. So basically what is happening is they're going to take and give Boeing a tax cut,
yep,
but they're also going to, like Dave said, cut a lot of the money away from welfare, schooling, things like that, to be able to also assist Boeing in building this new structure.
All right. Now, so Dave, you're obviously, based off what you just said here at the beginning of the show, you're not a big fan of this by any means.
Not a huge fan. I mean, I understand it's going to create a lot of jobs. Not sure how much tax money will be created from the influx to the economy. But yeah, I mean, I just don't get, handing out $1.7 billion to CEOs.
Yeah, and
we're making cuts to welfare and food stamps.
And I understand that, and I want to kind of like play devil's advocate for a minute here. I want to talk with you both about this, because let's look at this from an honest to God opinion, okay? Boeing bringing a major piece of their industry to St. Louis at that level.
Right.
I mean, that's a huge division of Boeing. That's their primary thing, and I'm sure the new 777s are going to be like a massive undertaking that is going to provide a lot of money for that company. Now, with that being said, that's also going to bring, as he stated, a lot of jobs to the St. Louis area. There's probably going to be 2,000 to 3,000 people potentially that are going to benefit from this and get new jobs.
15,000.
15,000. Okay, so 15,000 new jobs are going to be created. That's 15,000 people with families, food that needs to be put on the table, Christmas gifts under the Christmas tree.
Right.
You know, that is a huge windfall. And this could be over, like they said, 20 years. Like,
correct.
So that's 20 years that 15,000 people are potentially going to be benefiting from having this job. Now, Dave, I think you make a great point in the fact that, hey, that's cool and that's great and all, So do you think that there's maybe a middle ground we can come to on this to where we can make Boeing happy to make them still want to bring it here, yet not cut as much money away from welfare and schools and stuff?
But the we as Missourians are already, you know, why should they get the 1.7, or we should get the 1.7, I should say, because we're already helping, you know, the state of Missouri by our F/A-18 productions, our F-4 Phantom productions in Missouri with Boeing. So we should get that $1.7 billion. It doesn't matter, you know, the fact that it's going to affect welfare and stuff like that, because now those people have jobs, so they don't need to be on welfare.
And Dave, you disagree with that, right?
I do think there might be some middle ground. I was thinking, like, if they told Boeing to build their facility around in the North St. Louis area to kind of give that section of town a bit of a jump start.
Which is also where Boeing is based currently. I have a father-in-law who works for Boeing. Boeing's got a huge complex over there right next to the airport, for obvious reasons.
Correct.
And so, but there is ground that could be broke for different complexes up that direction. And so I see what you're saying. I you know, what I think is really interesting about this is Boeing's already here. What I don't understand is why there's, you know, the only real kick on this one that I don't like is why is there a need to give them a tax break to add on to what they already currently have here?
Because they're helping our economy. And the fact of, you know, where we're talking about...
So, Bobby,
about,
do you want them to get a tax break? Is that what you're asking
absolutely.
For?
Yes, absolutely. I definitely
them,
think so.
And, Dave, you're saying, no, don't give them a tax break. You know, it's taking way too much away from already established situations where people are in dire need anyway.
Well, I mean, if you're going to give the CEOs a tax break, then just don't complain about spending money on food stamps and... helping out the poor.
Yeah, and I have a real issue with our society. There is this massive undertaking in our society politically as well as socially that basically explains to everyone that it's horrible if you're a poor person. It's bad to be poor. And, you know, like we did the McDonald's thing a few weeks ago. I don't know, Dave, if you heard about this, but, like, McDonald's, the multi-billion-dollar company that it is, has gone out of their way to basically make sure that they keep their minimum wage employees at minimum wage. But at the same time of keeping them at minimum wage, even though, let's be honest, like, I've talked about this on the show before, Dave, how hard would it be for a company that makes $76 billion a year to take, oh, I don't know, $500 million of the $76 billion in profit? Mind you, what I just said was $76 billion in profit. That means once you've paid all your CEOs off, once you've paid all the overhead and electricity bills and all that, all the salaries and all the minimum wage salaries for all the different employees that you have, everything after that is $76 billion in profit. So basically, you've already paid for the running of your business for the year, and you made $76 billion more. What would be the problem in any of these companies? Like, we've talked about Costco. Costco pays a great wage, and they have really loyal employees. Yeah. Now, why couldn't they take $500 million of the $76 billion and spread that out and give everybody a $2 to $3 wage increase across the board for every minimum wage employee in the United States? The employees would be happier. They'd be more loyal. You'd probably get better service. And they still have $75.5 billion. $75 billion in profit. Like, that's my issue that I have, ladies and gentlemen, with our country in general is it's always about, hey, I just got to hold on to every single penny and dime that I got.
Right. But in this situation with Boeing, we are and I speak like I'm the CEO, but Boeing is bringing jobs to this country. Boeing could outsource this to a China or somewhere in Africa or Europe or Mexico. They could outsource this, so why shouldn't they get the tax cut? They're going to get the tax cut because also one thing that would help, you know, we were just talking about, you know, they have a lot of facilities up by the airport. Well, there's a very large area where a Ford plant used to be. Instead of selling that to some other investor, let Boeing buy that, and we also get that tax break because now you're not having to deal with other outside people. We're already here. And we're helping employ people, so now the unemployment rate is going down. Why can't we get a break?
I think
we're helping.
I think, like I said, I think that there's a middle ground here. I think you could still give Boeing tax breaks. I think that they would be willing to take lesser tax breaks to bring it here. But then again, we're in competition. You know, I have to, you know, for the one thing that I disagree, Dave, is that we're in competition with other cities for these things. And to get those 15,000 jobs here as opposed to Chicago, Illinois, or Nashville, Tennessee, we gotta compete with those people. And if we're, you know, if they're saying we'll give you $1.5 billion in tax breaks and St. Louis is saying we'll give you $1.7 billion in tax breaks, if that $200 million or whatever it is.
And the other thing is these tax breaks aren't like happening tomorrow. These tax breaks are going to be happening for them, for the company of Boeing, in 2040. So they have to build these planes, and then over time, they will get that tax break. It's not like it's happening right now.
Well, hey, Dave, I want to say thank you so much for calling into the show and being on the air with us. Hopefully you got your point out that you were trying to get out. And is there anything else that you wanted to talk about? You said you got a new business that you're trying to start up?
Kind of. It's a bit of a broadcasting website, podcast.
Okay, cool. Cool, cool, cool. And what's the name of the site going to be? Or do you already have it or you can't talk about it?
It's the Cardinals 10th Man. Basically, it's following baseball. I live down here in Springfield, so I figure I have a unique perspective to bring Cardinals fans.
So I guess, are you a big baseball fan?
I'm a huge baseball fan. If you want to talk baseball, I'll talk baseball all day.
Yeah, let's talk baseball. So basically, last year, I guess, you know, let's talk a little baseball. Like, you know, yeah. I'll go off the reservation for a few minutes here because we don't really do that too much here. And, of course, Bobby's a huge sports fan.
Yeah.
Even though his favorite team is a horrible, boring football team.
Whatever.
Like the Packers.
We win championships, baby.
Yeah, you won one championship a few years ago.
We won five.
Yeah, that's great, man. I think Dallas did, like, half of that in like 3 years.
Whatever.
Seriously. Let's not.
Anyway, we were talking about baseball.
Yeah, we're talking about baseball here.
Football, I'm a Rams fan, so I can't really say anything about the
Packers. Oh, fair enough. No, but let's talk a little baseball here while we got you on the line. So last year, the Hall of Fame was pretty much null and void for the Baseball Hall of Fame. This year, they seem to have themselves a heavy class.
At least coaches already have been picked, and unanimously, we're looking at Bobby Cox, Joe Torre, and Tony La Russa.
And all three of those gentlemen deserved completely to be there.
Absolutely.
I would have thought Joe Torre would have already been there probably a couple of years ago. Personally, that's what I would have thought. I forget how the
rule on management works. You have to be out for a certain period of time.
Here's the question. Is Jose Canseco ever going to get there?
Actually, I think Jose Canseco... Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Jose Canseco has already been voted out. Like, he's already had his tenure.
Multiple votes.
And you get 11 choices.
He didn't garner enough voting.
Which
attention.
Is ridiculous because Jose Canseco, and I've gone on the show before and I've argued this point, and I'll do it again right now with you, Dave. Jose Canseco, they called him a shill, a liar, and an idiot. And that he didn't have the credibility, and that's why his book, when it came out, was a big piece of crap, and he was just this liar who was just trying to bring everybody down. And lo and behold, within less than 10 years after the book comes out, almost every single person in his book either was brought up on charges for illegal steroid use or admitted it themselves in front of Congress. Why cannot that guy get in?
Sorry.
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I actually did a story on how I feel when the Cardinals were looking for their assistant hitting coach, that Jose Canseco might not be such a bad option.
Absolutely. He's still a player manager.
Yeah, there's no reason why guys like him. Like, what about Ricky Henderson? Ricky Henderson, isn't he the all-time base stealer?
All-time base stealer.
Like, why would you not want that guy working your first, second, or third base coaching?
Absolutely.
Like, I don't understand.
He played until he was, like, 55, so he might be a little tired.
But regardless of, well, look at Jose Oquendo. Like, this guy stood on the sideline. Like, how hard is it for a 55-year-old guy to wear a uniform and stand on the sidelines and go move his hands a whole bunch on his face? Like, it's not that hard. And he would, you know, who's the best base stealer for the Card? I hope you understand, even though I'm from St. Louis, born and raised here my whole life in North County. Like, I'm not the biggest Cardinals fan. They're my second favorite baseball team. I'm a Boston Red Sox fan. Uh-oh. Ouch. But at the same...
Congrats on that one.
Yeah. Well, no, but it wasn't like I was running around. Actually, I wanted, and Bobby and me talked about this, I wanted the Cardinals to win this year. I wanted to see the comeuppance. That was great in 2004 for them to come in the way they did, coming back on the Yankees and then turning around and sweeping the Cardinals to kill the curse off and give that town their first real big oomph in forever. Now, that's great, and that's a historical story, and that's a legendary moment in history for baseball and baseball fans. So, yeah, let that moment ride out. Just like a few years ago, I wanted to see the undefeated New England Patriots win the Super Bowl. Why? Because the chances that that would happen again are relatively slim.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that it's unheard of or it won't happen. I'm just saying it took forever to get back to there from 72 to what was that, 2007, 8?
2009.
From 72 to 2009 just to get back to that point with a team. It could be another 30 years before we see it again, if it happens at all. So I'm one of these people that is just like, I want to see great stories, and I think the Cardinals getting that sweep, and it was such a historical moment in 2004, and now you're right back there, and you have that chance to get your comeuppance. I would have liked to see the Cardinals win that, honestly. I think it would have been great to see the comeuppance.
Now, there's two big pretty big stories in Major League Baseball right now, Dave. Robinson Cano has signed a $420 million, I believe it was, contract.
How much?
$240 million.
I got it.
$20 million. I was going to say, my goodness.
$240 million contract for 10 years with the Seattle Mariners.
Okay.
And
that's going to go nowhere.
And then Mark Trumbo, one of the big players in L.A., has been traded off to the Arizona Diamondbacks.
All right.
So what do you think of the – do you think Robinson Cano is worth $240 million?
Well, it pays to be an elite player at an elite position.
But is Robinson Cano that elite? Let's be honest. In the history of baseball,
I don't think he's worth 240.
In the history of baseball, where is Robinson Cano? What's his position again? I'm sorry.
He plays second base.
Second base. Where is he going to fall on the list of top 10 second basemen in the history of baseball? Honestly. Will he even make the top 10?
Top 5.
You think he'll be top 5 of all time?
Well, it depends on if what's the ballpark up there in Seattle? Is that Safeco?
Safeco Field, yep.
Yeah, it depends on what that stadium does.
The house
that
Griffey built.
That thing has been known to eat some batters.
Yeah, that's definitely a pitcher's ballpark. But what about the Trumbo trade? No big players are going to L.A. for Trumbo. They're getting they might get a potential player in the
Rule
5.
They're not afraid to lose money with that team now. They got that Magic Johnson money, baby. AIDS can't keep them down.
No, that's the Dodgers.
Oh, you're talking about Anaheim.
Anaheim.
Oh,
you said Los Angeles.
It's not quite Magic money.
You meant to say Anaheim.
Yes, I meant to say the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
Right, yes. Los Angeles. Now, they should have just left it Anaheim Angels.
Well, here's my biggest thing that I was kind of upset with at the end of the year with the Cardinals is we had this great team. Yes, we did have a little bit of a fallout with our hitting in the playoffs, but why do you let players like Beltran, who was solid for you, why do you let him go? I really could care less about David Freeze. But why do you let players like Beltran, why do you let pitchers, you know, why do you let these guys leave the team?
Hey, you know,
we have a kid in Memphis called Oscar Tavares. He's one of the top, he's like the number two prospect in all of baseball. He's only 22 years old, so he's primed to go for next year.
Yeah, but why couldn't we have gotten rid of somebody like John Jay wasn't really producing for us at the plate?
Yeah, I'm not sure why we would stick with John Jay at the plate. I wasn't too impressed with him in the postseason at all. I don't think anybody really was.
I think it's time to get rid of our pitchers, all of them. I think it's time to start over pitching-wise so that in about 5 to 6 years, we got it. We got it hard. I mean, Wainwright, when he first started, like when they won in 2006, the World Series in 2006,
he was a closer,
but he was originally a starter. Before that, he just happened to get the slot as a closer because it was a place to fill.
Because Izzy got hurt, yeah.
Right, and so like that worked out. And, you know, Wainwright's a fantastic pitcher. Like, we're not going to ever knock any of these guys that are Cardinals pitchers by any means whatsoever, but at a certain point, like, who do we need to get rid of on the pitching side? Is there anyone that we need?
I don't think there's anybody you need to get rid of on the pitching side.
The only person, and let's I want to hear your opinion because Mark and I have gotten into this argument before. Lance Lynn. Lance Lynn, I think, is a terrible pitcher.
Shut up.
But like Mark said, do you think that he's actually that terrible if Mike Matheny is going to him? I absolutely do not
Dave,
like
this is Lynn. My opinion on this. This is my opinion on this. This is my opinion for all you armchair baseball fans out there, okay? All you Monday morning coaches, all right? Here's my opinion. You don't know what you're talking about. If you knew what you were talking about, you wouldn't be working at the freaking cupcake factory putting icing on the top of them, okay? You'd be working at a ballpark somewhere doing little signs like Jose Oquendo. That's what your job would be. There's no pitching coach at all in the major leagues that doesn't know their job well, or they wouldn't have that job. Most of these guys are legends at what they do. They're great. Like, who's the guy we got right now? It's the St. Louis guy.
Lilliquist.
And before him was Duncan. Are you sitting here trying to tell me that Lilliquist or Duncan don't understand pitching?
Oh, and Duncan is now the assistant to the GM in Arizona.
They don't know what they're doing? No, they know exactly what they're doing. So when they grab these guys and they bring them in, it's because they have that knack for knowing what's good, and they see something in these individuals. You know who doesn't have the knack for that? The guy at Jiffy Lube changing the oil who just happens to have all the World Series rings that Sports Illustrated put out the last week, okay? That guy doesn't know what's going on. He's just a big Cardinals fan. That's my opinion. Where do you stand on that, Dave?
You're absolutely right. I mean, when Tony La Russa retired, I sent over my resume to the Cardinals, and I never got a call back.
Were you? That's awesome, Dave.
Dave, were you a
professional baseball player?
I sure wasn't.
You sure wasn't.
I have no qualifications whatsoever, but it was worth a shot.
Hey, you know what? I respect that. That's cool. That's a cool story to tell people. Hey, I sent my thing, and if you can, as long as you can prove it in some way, that's great. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's my problem is in our society now, Dave, is we have so many people that are, I got it all figured out. That's their mentality. I got it all figured out. How many guys do you hear when you go to the baseball game down there in Springfield, or you come to a Cardinals game, or even in any of these other cities? Oh, so-and-so. Dude, every single year, La Russa would take these guys to the playoffs, right? Sometimes a World Series win. Before you knew it, if in the first five games of the next season they lost one single game, it'd be like, we got to get rid of La Russa. We got to get rid of this guy. And it's like, are you kidding me? What are you talking about?
I believe the phrase was, we need to get rid of Ryan Franklin, and that paid dividends.
That was the smartest move. So,
all right. Well, fair enough. Well, listen, Dave, I really want to say thank you so much for being on the air with us. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to the show and being a fan, as well as chiming in on the Spoing stuff and talking a little baseball and sports with us. It's been really fun, and we will be looking out for your new website for podcasting in regards to the Cardinals and stuff. Like, do you already have the website up?
Yeah, it's the CardinalsTenseMan.com.
All right, cool. Well, thank you so much, Dave. We will talk to you later.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Dave right there, fan of the Q, who has decided to join us and talk a little baseball as well as Boeing. Hey, listen, I got a few rants that I got to get to, but we're up against the bottom of the hour here for CBS and Fox News. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to get into my little rants, okay? As well as we're going to talk some stuff with Bobbo.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I just was going to say I want to talk about the selfie picture.
Oh, yeah, we're going to definitely talk about the selfie picture. We'll be back on The Q. Make sure you check out thecunow.com. Old episodes, new episodes, all that in between. We'll be back on The Q right after this.
Three 30 in the morning.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Q, of course. Mark Bland, producer Bobby. Like, we got our main man Garth in the background.
Garth, baby.
Garth Brooks, I think. Is that gonna be our music? Country music? Let me guess. Is it country music or is it Garth?
It's Garth.
We're doing all Garth tonight.
Yeah, because Garth Brooks announced this past week that in 2014 he will be going on a three-year tour.
Well, that makes sense to me. I mean, this guy sells out every single... Listen, I've seen Garth Brooks live in concert. Amazing, okay?
Uh-huh.
This guy sells out every single time that he steps... Like, the last time he did the thing... Bobby, the last time he went on tour, if you remember, before he went and did the Vegas shows, which he still does the Vegas shows. The Vegas thing, let me tell you something, two things. All right, first off, he did three cities. He did Kansas City, Missouri, and I think he did five or six shows there. Uh-huh. He did New York five or six shows, and he did LA five or six shows. If I remember, it was like those three cities, okay? Because he wanted to hit a place where everybody in the Midwest could get to.
Right.
Excuse me, that was centralized. than, you know, West Coast and East Coast.
I'm surprised St. Louis, though, or Kansas City, not St. Louis.
Well, exactly. But at the same point, you know, I understand it. Now, here's the funny thing. Well, I think Kansas City, because that's closer to Colorado. If there's people that want to drive.
Yeah. Okay.
If there's people that want to drive, that's still a long drive from Denver to Kansas City.
Right.
So, anyway, my point is, this guy literally lays it out on the line, and he sells out every single time. He's a fantastic performer. Now, that Vegas stuff, those are the sweet pot games right there. Let me tell you something, bro.
Oh, yeah, like Britney Spears stuff?
Oh, when there's Britney Spears, well, there's Elton John and his piano, it's Celine Dion, any of those.
Shania Twain, I think.
Cher. Oh, dude, yeah. That's the money right there. Because, listen, these guys come in, they got, like, a week's worth of blocks set out once a month or once every other month. They literally come, do their show for, like, a week. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, I think they do, like, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they're dark on Monday, they're dark on Tuesday, then they come back Wednesday. You know what I'm saying? Like, but anyway.
Well, like Britney Spears is on my Facebook, and she announced the summer stuff for
Don't
hers.
Don't ever admit that again. Don't ever admit that. That was just absolutely horrible.
She announced the summer dates, and like it's like she's doing like May 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and then she'll be back like the 12th through the 18th, and then she'll be back like the 25th through the
27th, like 3 days. Yeah, exactly. Like those Vegas situations are sweet because they get a high-end room, one of the suites there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So they basically live on the strip. Like Garth does it at the Wynn, the W-Y-N-N, the Wynn. So like that's money, man. Steve Wynn's a money dude. Like
he bought Garth a plane.
Well, of course he bought Garth a plane. There's no reason not to buy Garth a plane because literally what that dude will literally make for him in the first year, he will have already been able to buy 5 planes.
Yeah.
And all the fuel to get the dude back and forth off of just the first year of sales. And I think Garth's been there like 2 years now or 3 years doing the Vegas thing.
I think it's been 3 or 4 years. But yeah, it's been 12 years since Garth has been on an official tour. But this whole Wynn situation, Garth told Steve Wynn, he said, look, if I'm going to do shows during the week, here's going to be the only rule I have. I have to be back home. I think he lives in like
Oklahoma.
Yeah. He said, I have to be back home in the morning to put my kids on the bus for school.
Right. Yeah.
If that can't happen, I can't do the shows.
Right. And so basically he does a Friday, Saturday, Sunday gig, you know, like 2 or 3 times a month. And then he basically just stays at home the rest of the time.
And every once in a while he'll do it during the week. And that's what the plane is for. That's why Steve bought him the plane, was so he could finish the show at midnight, fly home,
and be able to put his kid.
Yep, and then fly back.
Fair enough. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into some rants here because I got some things I want to talk about. Bobby's got a rant too. He's not a big fan of Christmas this year. We're going to talk about that in a second.
I hate Christmas.
Before we get to that, come on now. You hate Christmas?
I do.
Scrooge? You really do?
No. I'm
Producer
not
Scrooge.
Like, I'm not to the point of being a Scrooge McDuck, but I just really.
Is it this year that's really getting you, or is it every year?
Slowly.
Well, let's talk about it then. Let's just move into it. Okay, so what's going on, Bobby?
Okay, so
I'm not having the best 2013 Christmas myself.
Right.
Now, I'm not going to get into details of what's going on, this, that, and the other. It's not that important, and, you know, I can complain about it, but who really is going to care about that? You know, those are personal things I'm dealing with. But at the same point, you know, Bobby, what's your issue?
Okay, so my big thing, and I'm kind of a product of the environment, I guess, because besides being the producer here, I am also a store manager for
retail. Yeah.
And being a retail manager for so long, you force down the throat of your customers, oh, make sure you come back during the holiday season. We're going to have this and this and this and this. And it's just, it takes the fun out of the holiday for me. Like, this has slowly progressed, and I feel kind of bad because my kids, you know, my 3-year-old,
they love it.
She's excited. She's like, Dad, I went and saw Santa, and, you know, there's going to be presents under the tree from Santa. And I try to do little things like a Santa phone call and, you know, a Santa video to make it fun for her. But the whole time in the back of my head, I'm going, I hate this.
Now, do you do the Elf on the Shelf?
No, I haven't. I've never done the Elf on the Shelf.
Ladies and gentlemen, we do the Elf on the Shelf in my house. It started a couple of years ago, and it's only because the only reason it's I never wanted to do it. I never wanted to do the Elf on the Shelf.
Uh-huh.
I've nothing against the Elf on the Shelf, but I just didn't want that to be one of the things that we do as a family. Which at this point now, I'm 2 years in solid, so I've kind of got to keep it going.
Right.
Like, I ain't got no choice at this point.
It seems pretty cool.
It's a cool idea, and you got to find ways to make it unique for the adults, the parents, too. But at the same point, it's like, The only reason we did it is because somebody else's kid in our family had an elf. Uh-huh. And of course, when you're 2 or 3 years old, you don't have a filter the same way you do when you're 14 or 15 or 16 right. years old. So, like, basically, you go over to the family member's house, they've got the elf, and that three-year-old, who happens to be, I'm just going to remain nameless on this one, but that three-year-old happens to go, that's my elf on the shelf up there. His name is such and such, and blah, 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 blah. And then now your three-year-old turns to you and goes, where's my elf on the show? Like, I don't have an elf.
And see, that's
and then they
the...
see the movie, and the movie tells them about
right.
it. And they're like, where am I at? Why don't I have that? And it's like, ugh.
And stuff like that, that's part of the problem. Now, one thing I will say is nothing has... My grandma passed away in 2001. Nothing has really felt like Christmas since she passed away. But slowly but surely throughout the years... And it's not because of, you know, just
as time passes,
that, but slowly throughout the years, it just Christmas has felt more and more like a burden, not like a fun event like it used to be. Like when I was a kid, and maybe it's because I'm getting older and I'll get to a point where it'll become fun again for me. But it's just really become like a burden, like, oh, great, I got to go, you know, get my wife a gift. I got to go get the kids gifts. I got to go, you know, spend time with the family and get them gifts. It just... It bothers me. Like, I don't want to be part of it.
It seems like a huge holiday undertaking. It's not just your simple Halloween where, like, at the beginning of the month, we might go buy the costume.
Right.
And then we just wait until the day of. And
right.
then you put the costume on and you just knock it all out in a 2 to 3 hour period. And that's Halloween for this year. Yay!
Yeah.
Everybody's done. Like, no, it's the day after Thanksgiving or that weekend. You're putting up the Christmas tree and you're putting up the lights. And
right.
then from there, it's like, oh, whose house are we going to go? And we got to drag the kids over there. And we
right,
got to do this.
Right.
And, like, I understand that. Like, I get it. You know, it's not just a small undertaking. So...
Yeah, it's just...
It's okay, Bob. Listen, Goose Fraba.
And I feel bad because, you know, like, the biggest thing is I feel bad because my kids are excited about it, and I can't share the enjoyment.
That is
the one... Enjoyment.
Let me tell you something. That is the one thing that is really great about kids. If there's anything that... I've tried to explain this to people who try to tell me that they don't want kids. The one thing that I try to... point them towards so that they understand the value of having children
uh-huh.
is not about the children so much. It's... This is the only example I ever give. The first time that the 2 or 3 year old understands what Christmas is and the value of it. Because once again, it becomes fun for the adults. See, what happens is once you get into high school and you graduate high school,
uh-huh.
you have that dead period where you're dating girls and you're
yeah.
eventually trying to meet your wife and things like
yeah,
that. And you
yeah.
don't have kids yet. You know what I'm saying? So Christmas is literally just a day of the year where you guys get together with some family members and stuff like that. And sometimes you get some gifts, sometimes you don't. You know what I'm saying? There's no real value to it other than when we're done with this, we're going to go back to our apartment. We're going to, you know, throw on the new episode of Sons of Anarchy or whatever, which, yeah. by the way, amazing. Yeah, I said it, ladies and gentlemen. We'll beep that out. Listen, so it's, dude, the season, I'll talk about it later. I got something. I'm going to go somewhere with that. It was amazing. So my point is that as you get older, then you have kids. And you start to realize when you see the gleam in their eye,
uh-huh.
the first glimmer in their eye of the value of Christmas when they're like 2, 2.5, 3 years old, they start to understand that the tree's got lights on it and it's got ornaments and there's a guy named Santa Claus. You know what I'm saying? And they're still not getting the gifts. But by the time they turn 3, they already understand that the guy with the big red suit and beard
right.
is coming back this year. There's a lot of movies about him and I know him.
Right,
I know him.
Right, right.
Right? Elf? I know him.
Yeah.
I know him.
Santa,
I know him.
Buddy the Elf, what's your favorite color?
So basically, and then what happens is you start to realize, oh my goodness, she or he is going to get up on Christmas morning and they're going to run out to the tree to see if Santa left gifts like they see in all the movies and stuff
right.
like that. So then it becomes a new game for the parents.
Yeah.
Like you start to get excited knowing that they're going to get excited and choosing the right thing that's going to excite them. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe after this year, for me, it'll get a little bit more exciting because this is the first year where my oldest is really kind of understanding what's happening. And she understands, you know, she needs to behave. She needs to, you know, help out around the house or else Santa's not going to bring her, you know, Sophia the First toys or whatever. And so maybe next year will be better for me. But really just these last few years, I just feel kind of like as soon as November 1st hits,
oh, crap, here comes the holiday season.
I understand.
And the force feeding of Christmas music makes me want to jam screwdrivers in my ears.
But that's only because you work in retail and you guys are playing it there. Like,
no, my store, I purposely turn it off.
I don't listen to it in my car.
Probably going
to
get in
trouble.
There's
no cell phone ringtone that forces me to listen to it. There's no radio station that has a gun to my head that says I have to listen to it. So
right.
I only get indoctrinated with it. Perfect word. If I'm walking around like Macy's or something, that's about it. Like, I'm not going to hear it anywhere else primarily throughout that. Now, I mean, it's around, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But I'll tell you what used to really get on my nerves. I used to not have the ability to hook my phone up to my car stereo properly, so I used to have an FM transmitter.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
And when driving around at Christmas time with an FM transmitter, horrible decision. Because every single neighborhood has that one guy who thinks his Christmas music's the bomb, so he's going to FM transmit it out to everybody with his light display. And guess what? It just ruins. While I'm in the middle of listening to a podcast or a talk show or something like that,
yeah.
Then all of a sudden, jingle bells, jingle. And I'm like, where is this guy? Why? Why are you doing this?
Game on, quarter one, two, three. Game off, quarter four of the year.
Yeah, no crap. Okay, so let's move on with this situation, okay? We've got to deal with... I'll give you a choice.
Selfie.
You want to talk selfie?
Yeah, because there's something incorporating the selfie as well that I want to talk about that I just found out, like, last night that's pretty funny.
All right. Well, it really wasn't a selfie, much less a funeral selfie, but the juxtaposition of Nelson Mandela's memorial, President Obama's playfulness, and the FLOTUS's ostensible stern look was way too much for the conservative world to pass up.
Oh, no.
And so Selfie Gate was born. Everything's got to be a gate now. Have you noticed that?
Yes, yes. Obama Gate.
Everything's got to be a gate. Oh, Benghazi Gate.
Yeah, Benghazi Gate.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so as well as this whole selfie picture...
Can I finish the story and then go ahead. We can talk about it? Okay,
fine. My bad, I thought you were done.
But amid the unserious speculation over the drama unfolding in front of the lens lay the truth, as seen only by the man who stood behind the camera that took the famous picture of Obama doing the selfie. Taking to the AFP blog, photographer Roberto Schmidt, the man who snapped the now infamous photo, broke his silence on the true story behind the selfie seen around the world. So Obama took his place amid these leaders who gathered from all corners of the globe. Among them was British Prime Minister David Cameron, as well as a woman who I wasn't able to immediately identify. I later learned it was Danish Prime Minister Helle Thorning-Schmidt. Yeah. I'm a German-Colombian based in India, so I don't feel too bad I didn't recognize her. At the time, I thought it must have been one of Obama's many staffers. Anyway, suddenly this woman pulls out her mobile phone and took a photo of herself smiling with Cameron and the U.S. president. I captured the scene reflexively. All around me in the stadium, South Africans were dancing and singing and laughing to the honor of their departed leader. It was more like a carnival atmosphere, not all that morbid funeral talk that you feel. The ceremony had already gone on for 2 hours and would last another two. The atmosphere was totally relaxed. I didn't see anything shocking in my viewfinder, president of the U.S. or not. Schmidt says he was perhaps more shocked than anyone that a Michelle Obama was depicted in the media as being rather peeved about the activity taking place nearby. Photos can lie, the photographer writes. In reality, just a few seconds earlier, the first lady herself was joking around with those same exact people. Her stern look was captured by chance. Schmidt insists he was merely trying to capture the spontaneous photos of world leaders acting like human beings like me and you, since their public image is rarely left uncontrolled. I confess, too, that it makes me a little sad we are so obsessed with day-to-day trivialities, Schmidt says, instead of little true importance things. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. The photo can lie.
That's maybe the best part. You know, that's the best part about this whole thing is, you know, actually, let me see if I can pull this up real quick. From you, Mark Bland, yourself personally, sent me a text the other day that said, quote.
Yes, the quote.
Conservative people might be the dumbest people on the face of this planet. And I bring that up due to the fact that that is the type of people that are causing the problem with this picture. People who are trying to find problems in our president, conservatives, even some liberals and moderate people are all trying to nitpick at everything. Well, here's one thing that also happened at this Nelson Mandela tribute that I find very intriguing to me. The deaf communicator, the sign language interpreter, was not even signing anything. People from the deaf community have verbally... Can you verbally do that if you're deaf? Anyway.
They've explained.
They have said nothing that was being signed was real. Nothing was understandable. You can't understand it. And that is not just American deaf part of the deaf community.
But here's the thing. The deaf community, everybody has their own language. Yes, similar words are done in similar fashion. But if you speak Zimbabwean, okay?
Right.
The way that a deaf Zimbabwean communicator, interpreter, okay, will interpret those words to someone who's Zimbabwean so they understand the Zimbabwean words.
Right.
It's going to look different than the way an American does the words.
But
like,
it was
it's not a universal. We should actually have somebody. I know somebody whose wife is deaf,
uh-huh.
and he is a really well-known interpreter in the St. Louis area,
uh-huh.
does like concerts and things like that.
Okay.
But I don't think that it's a universal language. I think that it's kind of like our languages are.
Right.
You know, like the way people in China speak to each other. We don't necessarily in Missouri understand when two Chinese people are talking to each other. They're using words just like we would, and those words are the same style of words.
Right.
But there's no translation between them for us to understand and them to understand.
But it was even the South African deaf community who said they had no understanding of what this person was interpreting.
All right.
Couldn't figure anything out.
Well, and ladies and gentlemen, that's my problem that I have with you conservatives, okay? I'm not against conservatives. Everyone's like, oh, all you do is bitch about conservatives, blah, blah, blah. Listen, conservatives are the only ones that get butthurt and nitpick stupid things like this, okay?
Yep.
You don't have the whole story. All you see is, there's the black President Obama I don't like at Nelson Mandela's funeral, and the first words out of your mouth after that is, why didn't Margaret Thatcher get a half-staff flag? Why didn't Margaret Thatcher get a half-staff? Because Margaret Thatcher isn't supposed to get a half-staff flag. Nelson Mandela is historical. Margaret Thatcher isn't. Winston Churchill was historical. Margaret Thatcher wasn't. Yes, Margaret Thatcher was a very important person during the Reagan-Bush era back in the 1980s
right.
of handling stuff when it came to the country of England. I get that. She's not Winston Churchill level. She wasn't putting down great speeches that everybody was remembering forever.
Right.
She wasn't breaking down the Iron Curtain. So stop it.
The other thing, too, is...
And I'm not knocking Margaret Thatcher. Great human being.
Yeah.
Amazing. But she's not... Dude, okay, I'll ask you a simple question, Bobby. You ready?
Yeah.
You didn't even know I was going to ask you this question. Bobby, in the history of the world, who will go down more historical? Margaret Thatcher or Mother Teresa?
Mother Teresa.
Who will go down more historical? Gandhi or Margaret Thatcher?
Gandhi.
Who will go down more historical in the history of the world? John F. Kennedy, who was shot and killed as president of the United States, or Margaret Thatcher?
JFK.
That's my point. That's my point, ladies and gentlemen. And there's people that are even more important to our society and our history than that we don't even talk about. We talk about World War I and World War II because of the significance of the wars being world wars. Do you realize there was an individual who shot the Archduke Ferdinand to start that war? That one man who probably, I always make the cup, like I made fun of the cupcake factory worker,
yeah.
right? A cupcake factory worker with a gun can kill the president.
Absolutely.
And change the course of history forever. John Wilkes Booth was a failed actor who literally shot Abraham Lincoln in the back of the head. Changed the course of history.
Lee Harvey Oswald.
Lee Harvey Oswald. A nobody. Changed the course of history. We have men who are more influential in the actual history of our world that we don't even talk about. Yet we will complain about Margaret Thatcher, very good person, Nelson Mandela, and funeral selfies. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting there going, hey, Obama was right for this, that, and the other. Listen, I don't know the context of why the picture was taken. See, what happens is a Breitbart.com just gets a picture sent to them, and before they even ask what was going on around the situation 10 minutes before and 10 minutes after, all they do is they go, oh my God, it's Obama, and he's taking a selfie at a funeral. It's Nelson Mandela. And then they post it. And it's all blah, 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 blah. And it's like, you guys are stupid. You're morons. If you're a conservative radio show host, I feel horrible for you as a human being. Because all you do, because some of you are really smart, and all you do is sit there and defend morons. Mommy bloggers. Mommy bloggers. Nothing personal to Dana Lesh. I'll say her name personally right here on the show. Nothing personal to Dana Lesh. She's probably a fantastic human being. But here's the problem. There's a bunch of people out there when a person like a Dana Lesh and this is just a hypothetical example, I don't know if this actually happened, but she'll take a picture like that and she'll just ram it down everybody's throat as, this is the devil incarnate, and how dare us have to listen to him every day of our lives. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, I wake up every single morning just like Bobby does. I don't think about the Constitution. I don't think about amendments.
I definitely don't have it on me all the time.
I don't think about any of that stuff ever. Swear to God. I'm not even joking. I host a political radio show. You're listening to it right now. I don't think about none of that. I interact with individuals when there's questions about politics. I talk. I give my opinion. They give their opinions. That's it. I don't brush my teeth trying to recite the Bill of Rights. I don't sit there and every time I open up the newspaper, I go, gosh, darn it, look at this. God, oh, blah, blah. No, I don't do that.
Well, the funny part, too, is the Danish prime minister that this picture that's part of this picture, as far as I've read, is a conservative.
Yeah, but ladies and gentlemen, the guy said it. The guy who took the photo said it. For 2 hours before that photo even happened, they had already been doing the funeral. Like, don't you think the first hour was probably pretty solemn, pretty quiet?
Yeah.
But then you got South Africans, where the dude was from, who are dancing in the aisles below and celebrating the life of a great man, which, by the way, Nelson Mandela he falls into that category of people. Like, there's just certain people you don't talk down on, okay? Right. There are certain people that, like, they just do so much good, or they just, no one ever talks bad about them. Like, if Tom Hanks died tomorrow, no one's going to say a bad thing about Tom Hanks. You know why? Or Dustin Hoffman. No one's going to say anything bad about those people because they don't do nothing bad. Like, they're just good people that do entertaining stuff that entertain all of us. And in Nelson Mandela's case, he wasn't entertaining people. He was just a good person that was trying to end apartheid and help people and this and that, you know? And then he ended up going to jail against his will for 20 plus years, you know? And it was just,
they're not in the same category, but that's why you don't hear people saying anything negative about Paul Walker.
Yeah, exactly.
Since he passed away.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, on that note right there, we're going to take a quick break here on the Cue. We will be back right after this. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Cue, of course. Today, all Garth Brooks.
You're fair.
Oh, go ahead.
Last one to know. Last one to show, I was the last one you thought you'd see there.
Oh, producer Bobby, you have just that beautiful golden voice that touches the airwaves every single time. Welcome back to the Cue. Mark Bland, producer Bobby. We're talking a little bit about Obama's selfie gate, this situation that was happening. We're going past that. We're moving on because we have other things that we want to talk about. And I got a couple of rants I want to get. First off, the Pope. Did you hear about the Pope?
Uh-oh, what's he doing
now? He is Time Magazine's Person of the Year.
Really?
The Time Magazine Person of the Year is the Pope. My favorite, actually, when it comes down to Time's Person of the Year was, I guess, 2005, 6, 7, somewhere in that range there. It was just a picture. It was basically a mirror image. It was like a mirror on the cover of Time Magazine, and it was you. You are the Time Person of the Year. So it was just like anybody who picked up the magazine just looked into the mirror.
That is terrible.
You know, and some of these people, they blow my mind. Like, can you bring up the list real quick if you get a chance of Time People of the Year over the last few years? I'd like to, like, you know, I'd really like to break down the list a little bit while we got a few minutes here. But let me rail on this, and we'll come back to this time once you get the time list, okay? Mark, it's a little letter that I got that I want to rant on a little bit, okay? I'm a 21-year-old woman, skinny, long brown hair, straight teeth, big brown eyes, and tan.
Ooh.
And that's all they see.
Jesus.
All the messages I receive are saying how pretty I am. I've made it clear in my very first part of my bio on Plenty of Fish, do not message me about how pretty I am. I have a long bio because I'm giving you plenty of things to ask me about. If you send me a message about how pretty I am, that tells me right away that you didn't bother to look further than that. This is a letter from a listener where they're complaining about how they get treated on Plenty of Fish.
Okay.
I'm smart. I work hard. I have goals and dreams. I have hobbies. I have two dogs, all of which are mentioned in my bio. Do not just talk about my looks. I am more than what I look like. Do not waste my time. Do you think I'm fair in having that assessment, Mark? You know what? Honestly, no, you're not. You're not fair in having that assessment. I'm sorry. Listen, sweetheart, okay? People who are truly good-looking don't have a problem finding dates, and they don't need Plenty of Fish.
In real life.
Yeah, that's my point. Like, I'm not knocking. Listen.
No knock on my mama.
There are people out there who are have social anxiety disorder type things, okay? They're just not good being in social situations. And they might feel more comfortable. They might be extremely gorgeous. They might be a 9 on a scale of 1 to 10. They might be extremely gorgeous, model-esque, you know, beautiful, like an actress style.
Victoria's Secret model.
Yeah, sure. And they just don't have that social stigma that other people do, so it's a little bit rougher for them.
Right.
Yet they get hit on all the time, I'm sure. And they just might feel more comfortable trying to vet people through a Plenty of Fish or a Match.com type situation.
Uh-huh.
But the real problem is, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a good-looking person, you don't need to be on Plenty of Fish. I'm not knocking this girl. I understand. You're 21. You're skinny. You're long brown hair. You're straight teeth, brown eyes, tan. You're beautiful. I get it.
You're gorgeous.
But if you got that going for you, you don't need to be on Plenty of Fish. How about you go and hang out with a couple of friends at the bar?
Yeah, there's got to be something somewhere.
Go to a concert.
And maybe it's not even that you have social anxiety. Maybe it's just you annoy the hell out of people.
You know, we had Shepard's son, the owner Joe? Of the station, Joe, here.
Joe's cool. I love that.
Joe's a great guy. Joe came on the show, and we had, at the old station, we had a discussion on the queue here in regards to the younger society and how the internet influences their lives now.
Absolutely.
In comparison to when me and the other guests that were on the show that night grew up, because they were a couple of my friends that were closer to my age and what we dealt with dating and the internet and things like that. And it's really funny to me because I get it. In our society in 2013, we are definitely more entrenched into this whole technological advancement.
Absolutely.
And so therefore, they're going to be a lot more, I guess, comfortable talking to each other through private messages on Facebook and hitting on each other that way. You know, like the thing that became huge this past year on the young side that I found out about a couple of months ago is Snapchat.
Snapchat, yeah.
Snapchat's become huge for teens and young adults, like under the age of 25.
Correct.
But here's the funny thing. Snapchat, the whole point of it is you take a picture, you set it for a certain amount of time, you send it to another person who follows you, that person can look at it for the amount of time you send it to them. It could be for 10 minutes, it could be for 13 seconds. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But after that, that's all done, it disappears off your phone.
Forever.
It's gone forever. You can't get back to that thing. You can't watch it. You can't even take a screen. Like, you know how the iPhone, you press the two buttons.
No. You can't take a screenshot of it.
No, I don't think you can.
You can, but it notifies them you take a screenshot.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It notifies them. Exactly. Okay, yeah. You can take it, but it lets them know that happened.
Correct.
So that you kept that picture or whatever.
Correct.
Now, my thing is, they're using it to just send each other penis pics and sexual pictures and things like that. Like, they're not usually the way that they need to be using something like that. And they're comfortable doing that. My reason for bringing that up is they're comfortable. That's the technology that they're comfortable with using nowadays in 2013. So I can understand needing Plenty of Fish and going to Plenty of Fish and utilizing that. But I don't think that if you're truly pretty, you need to even go down that road.
Here's one thing I'll say to that extent. So me being 25 years old, I am pretty much about the same age as Joe. But with that, I don't feel comfortable with that whole, like social media thing. Like I do use it. I like using it.
But you use it for business purposes more than anything else.
More than anything.
Promotion of your own things. And
correct.
Like queue and things like that.
Correct. You
know? And then some family stuff.
Some
like,
family
oh, here's
stuff.
Some pictures.
Right. But it's, to me, okay, I grew up in, or let's see. I went to high school. This is really going to, you know, make a lot of people feel
What year did you graduate?
2006. So
I was
started.
Facebook was around, but it was
Facebook
probably
started my senior year of high school. You had to be invited by someone else.
Okay, fair enough. So MySpace was the big thing then.
MySpace, correct. And
which, by the way, MySpace was horrible. I'm sorry. Glitter falling down people's pages.
MySpace was awesome.
Slow. It loaded. It took forever to load.
So from 2000,
it was horrible.
Put it in this aspect. From 2002 to 2006, I was in high school.
Right.
So that was my time frame to deal with actually socially speaking with girls and learning, you know, talking to girls.
Now, how much
like
of that time period did you use like AOL chat and things like that? Chat like
I didn't use any of that stuff until probably the end of my junior to my senior year. I didn't use that stuff. I actually socially talked to people, and I did have a social anxiety. I was freaked out to talk to girls.
Really?
I was terrified. If I did not have a problem, I probably would have talked to my wife in high school. But I was terrified. We went to the high school together, but I was terrified to talk to girls unless they approached.
Is she the same age as you, or is she younger?
She is the exact same age. We are 9 hours apart.
And she graduated.
Same day, graduated the same year, went to the same high school, born the exact same day.
So when did you guys start dating? In high school?
No,
or
we dated after high school, and that was because of MySpace. I was the high school administrator for the MySpace page, and she happened to add our high school to her page, which popped up a little thing in my email and told me, hey, you should reach out to this person. So I started talking to her, and I realized, oh, yeah, this is a girl from high school that I thought was cute, but I never had the balls, basically, to talk to her. I finally started talking to her, asked her out on dates. We started dating, and then eventually got married, and we just this past week celebrated our second wedding anniversary.
Well, congratulations.
But it's just really weird because I had a social anxiety, and I wouldn't talk to girls unless they approached me first. But these websites like Facebook and MySpace, and I think there was a website a couple years ago called My Yearbook and stuff like that, that is changing the game because these kids aren't having to actually deal with real life issues of, oh my God, I can't talk to this person. And down the road, it will, I feel, basically the whole point of this is it's going to hinder them in the business world eventually because they're not going to have to overcome these obstacles of being able to speak to people that make them nervous.
Hmm. Interesting.
So, I got the Times.
You got the Times. The Time Magazine Person of the Year this year is Pope Francis.
Let me give you
and he deserves it because this man literally in the middle of the night while everybody else is sleeping, dons himself into like a cloak. Goes out into the alleys around the Vatican, and he like gives food and gives prayer and helps homeless and poor people around Rome. Like that's what he does, which is kind of what you expect somebody in a pontiff situation to do.
Correct.
So now
I'm going to give you a couple names of some historical.
Give me the
people.
Year. Do you got the year and the person?
Yep.
All right. So let's start with let's give me some big ones from the 90s.
Okay. Well, let me give you first off this one. 1927, Charles Lindbergh. 1928, Walter Chrysler.
Okay, Chrysler, the Chrysler Building, potentially that's a technological advancement. I can see that. I want to talk about more of the ones that are within our time period.
Okay.
And a lot of the people listening to the show just because it's easier for us to gauge whether they deserved it or not. And in hindsight, where they fall. Like, you know, I think that that's really important. You know, what you do the year that you get it, which is, of course, it's called Time's Person of the Year. So at that time period, you're an important individual. But some of these people might have fallen off or gone of wayward styles. You know what I'm saying? So, like, give me some 90s people.
Okay, 90s, but I have a question first.
Yes.
1960.
Yeah, sure.
The Times person was not a person. It was actually a generalized statement. The U.S. scientists.
The U.S. scientists.
Yes.
I don't know why that it would be the U.S. scientists. Evidently, whatever they were doing at the time.
Correct.
Was important.
Okay, so
probably leading towards that was probably the year that they might have announced that they were going to try to go to the moon and they were going to try to get there. You know what I'm saying? So, like, that's
possibly,
potential that's why they became Time's Person of the Year.
All right, so we'll start right outside of 1990. It was 1989, Mikhail Gorbachev.
Okay, Mikhail Gorbachev, potentially, like, see, it's always funny to me when, I mean, I understand Time Magazine is a U.S.-based magazine, but they try to have a very worldly view.
Yes.
A lot of people tend to say that the Times Magazine Person of the Year is usually more liberally based when it comes to the political spectrum.
Right.
So Mikhail Gorbachev is a communist, ran a communist country.
There's a lot of presidential people.
Oh, I'm sure there
the
are.
The president is a lot. Like the following year, 1990, George H. Bush H.W. Bush.
Well, that's probably because of the war.
Yep.
The first war.
91, Ted Turner.
Ted Turner, I don't know why Ted Turner in 91, maybe
it
because
just says
of
founder of CNN.
Yeah, like maybe because the fact that he founded that news channel and it literally changed the way we view news. I mean, prior to that, literally, you only got your news in the mornings or at 5 o'clock and 6 p.m. That was it.
Yeah.
Those were your only news times. So you had to wait in between things for like information to develop, as opposed to now where people get on Twitter and immediately, as soon as the bomb goes off, they've got they got 4,000 pictures of who they think the suspected Boston Marathon bomber is, and none of them are that person.
Right. 92, and I think this was only because he was elected in this year, was Clinton.
Okay, yeah, 1992, that would have been Joe. But, and also, that was a huge move. Like, he became a very popular president, not because he was popular. I mean, obviously, he was popular, but he became kind of like the everyman president, you know?
Right.
Everybody thought, because that, literally, the saxophone moment that he had on the Arsenio Hall show
was awesome.
Really made people think, this is a guy that I could go have a beer with and talk about baseball.
Right.
They, like, he wasn't this hoity-toity, like, highfalutin individual. Like, he felt like he could have been your uncle
yeah.
Bill. You know, it's Uncle Bill, you know?
Now, 1993... is a good year for this because of the fact it has to do with Nelson Mandela. 1993 is the peacemakers from Palestine, South Africa, and Israel. It was the first face-to-face agreement between the Palestinians and Israel, and then also the president
de Klerk
of South Africa oversaw Nelson Mandela's release from prison.
Right, yeah, and that's a huge thing. Like, those are big things. This is a man who went to jail, and obviously, God rest his soul, Nelson Mandela passed away this past week. And, you know, horrible. But right. He was 95 years old. He was sick. It's not unheard of for a 95-year-old person to pass away, guys.
Right.
You know, and he was a great man who did great things. But, you know, he was in jail for, like, 20-plus years prior to getting released that year. So, yeah, that would probably be a big moment in our history
right.
when it comes to relations between people in our world, you know? So what about 94?
94, I think the only reason for this may have been the first time he came to the States, but it was Pope John Paul II.
Yeah, that makes sense. Pope John Paul coming to the United States, doing his tour around the United States, came to St. Louis.
Yeah.
I did not get to go and see it as much as I wanted to.
You didn't go in 94?
I did not go in 94.
I went when he came in 2000.
I did not go when he went in 2000 either.
That was pretty cool when he met Mark McGuire. 1995, Newt Gingrich.
Newt Gingrich in 95. I don't know why Newt Gingrich in 95. That's kind of odd, but all right, go on.
He was elected Speaker of the House.
All right, but still, like, I don't think being elected Speaker of the House is that big of a deal.
1996 was a gentleman by the name of David Ho.
David Ho. Does it explain who David
Ho
was?
Yeah, David Ho was the scientist that pioneered AIDS research.
All right, fair enough. You know, maybe he came up with some of the medicines that have contributed to people living a lot longer lives with HIV infection.
1997 is a gentleman by the name of Andrew Grove.
All right.
And Grove was the chairman and CEO of Intel.
All right, yeah. Computers are starting to influence our society at this point. You know, we are right. We have AOL popping off.
Right.
Computers are literally getting faster and faster. And, you know, Intel to this day is still the strongest chip when it comes down to the markets.
1998. I love this. 1998 was both Bill Clinton and Kenneth Starr.
Now, that's an interesting one. I mean, you got Bill Clinton who's dealing with
the whole Lewinsky situation.
Exactly.
And then Kenneth Starr is the one who published the Starr Report.
Right.
Opening the door for the impeachment of Clinton.
Exactly. So, but that's right. But that makes sense. That was a big deal that year. See,
right.
What we have to remember is that when they're deciding these time persons of the year, sometimes it's a huge story.
Yeah.
You know, like, as long as it's not a person who, like, O.J. Simpson was the biggest story of 93, 94, or whatever it was.
Right.
Okay. It's very possible that O.J. Simpson could have been Time's Person of the Year, but the problem is that Time's Person of the Year usually has a positive connotation to it.
Right.
And that's what's really weird about the Clinton thing. It's, in this case, it wasn't a negative. It wasn't a negative slam.
But it showed the president is a real person.
Right, exactly. And so there was a lot of talk about him that year. It makes sense. I get it.
1999 is a gentleman by the name of Jeffrey P. Bezos.
Jeff Bezos. And I think he was the investor.
No, he is the founder and CEO of Amazon.com.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, Jeff Bezos. I'm sorry, guys. That's my own fault. I should have known that better.
In 2000 was George Bush. 2001, of course, it wasn't Bush. It was Rudy Giuliani.
For being the mayor of New York during
9/11.
Correct. Of course.
2002 is the whistleblowers, and this group was represented by three people: Cynthia Cooper, Colin Rowley, and Sharon Watkins. And these are the people who discovered the irregularities in Enron.
Oh, yes. The beginnings of our failure as a society to understand that when you let conservative-based individuals spend money that's not necessarily there. They will lie, cheat, and steal, and destroy your economy.
Now, that's what Watkins did. Cooper, Cynthia Cooper, exposed a $3.8 billion fraud at the company WorldCom.
Yep, the WorldCom issue, same year.
And then Colleen Rowley was an FBI agent that gave testimony about the FBI's mishandling of information during September 11th.
Oh, yeah. That goes back to some of the stuff that we're talking about. You know, the mishandling of information during 9/11. Guys, I'm sorry. I'm not knocking her, okay? And I'm not this just bleeding heart liberal who's just against all conservatives or anything like that. I'm actually going to defend the conservative side of this, okay? The stuff hit the fan that day. It was very chaotic. There was a lot of things that were going down. I understand that not all of it's going to get translated properly.
Right.
You know, there's not going to be, you know, the person that I think should have got it the 1 year, and I can't remember what year the movie came out, but Bowling for Columbine, Michael Moore should have totally got Time's Person of the Year.
2005, I think, is when it came out, and I'll tell you in a second who that was.
Who was it? Go ahead.
Well, 2003 was The American Soldier.
Yep.
2004 was, again, Bush because he was reelected. And then 2005 were The Good Samaritans, who were helping, I don't know exactly what happened in 2005, but it was the Live 8 concerts.
Oh, and this Katrina, wasn't it? Was that during Katrina?
I think it may have been to benefit Katrina, but it was The Good Samaritans were represented by Bono, Bill, and Melinda Gates.
Okay, yeah, the people that are doing things. Bill Gates, ladies and gentlemen, you don't even understand how you guys all want to be rich out there. We all want to be rich. We all want to make a lot of money. Bill Gates has literally given away, I think, more than half of his total net worth that he's made over his entire existence.
Bill Gates is still, and this number is after he gives to charity, $170 billion.
Yeah, he gives so much money away to charity that he has because he just can, because he understands I'm a human being. I brush my teeth.
Right.
You can sit there and sell me a $2,000 toothbrush, but I only need to buy the $1.98 one at freaking Walmart.
Yeah.
And I'll still get the same amount of teeth cleaned with the $2,000 one as I will with the $1.98 one. Like, he is a smart individual who just understands life. That's why I loved Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett always, they asked him, they're like, so, like, do you like certain, like, tailors and your clothes a certain style? And he goes, I buy my shoes from Walmart. And they go, what? And he goes, yeah, they're just comfortable. I buy for comfort. And that's smart.
Yeah.
That's smart. This is the richest man in the world. And, well, one of the richest men in the world. And he buys for comfort. It's not literally because it's got a name on it.
Yeah.
He's just as amped to buy a fully loaded Malibu, as long as he fits it right and it's comfortable, as he is a Phantom.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, come on.
2006 is the one you were talking about, you, and that's represented by the individual content creators. Real quick, 2007, Putin. 2008, Barack Obama. 2009, tell me if you know who this is real quick. Ben Bernanke.
Yeah, he was the Fed chairman.
Yep, the chairman of the Federal Reserve. 2010, Mark Zuckerberg. 2011, The Protester. 2012, Barack Obama again, and 2013, we just talked about it, Pope Francis.
Now, see, the one that's interesting is Zuckerberg, because it makes sense that Zuckerberg would get that, because Facebook literally ruled our lives.
Well,
that
was the year that Facebook went on the open market.
Not only that, but wasn't it the year that the movie was released too?
Yeah, social media.
Yeah, was that the same
year? Social network.
Was it
2010?
Yeah. So there it is, ladies and gentlemen. That's your persons of the year since the 1990s, as well as a few others that we threw in there. I've got a story here that says about this Google situation that I've got to read.
Okay.
Because we're going to have to get to that. We're bumping down to the bottom of the hour here. Walmart bans a man for life for matching ads.
Yes.
Talk about that. Also, we're going to do a little BNN. I promised some BNN. We got game on, game off. So Bobby, before we take this break, I'm going to do something, even though it's against my better judgment. I'm going to do this because I want good people to get good things, and I want you to be able to help people in need.
Uh-huh.
This Christmas, Amazon has a site, and I don't have it right in front of me. I forgot to like copy and paste it in, but I think it's like share.amazon.com or something down that road. We'll find out exactly what it is during the break, and we'll come back with that information right at the top of the break.
Okay.
basically, the whole point is that if you go through this link and you click through it, what happens is when you spend money with Amazon.com, even though Amazon doesn't even allow me to have my thing anymore.
Right.
And we promoted it forever because of the state of Missouri. If you go through this and you click it, it allows some of your purchase, the money that you pay, to be donated to a charity of your choice.
Which
I think is really cool because it doesn't increase the price at all. It just takes a portion of what you've paid off of their profits.
Okay.
And allows them to donate it to a charity of your choice that you can put in. So
perfect.
We're going to come back with that website right after this. Please stay tuned. This has been The Q. You're listening to 1280 AM KYRO, 1420 WINI, as well as you're listening to this on RadioFubar.com and TapDetroit.com. We'll be back after this.
Gentlemen, welcome back to The Q. Of course, my name is Mark Bland, and we are doing all Garth Brooks today. A little Baton Rouge action right there with producer Bobby dancing in the background.
Absolutely. It's anticipation of Garth Brooks' three-year tour starting in 2014.
3 whole years. It's a long time.
Yeah, man. I couldn't imagine.
But it's not
going
to feel like 3 years to him. Like, it's going to be 3 years of his life by the time it's all said and done. But you know, it's going to be like, oh, well, I went on tour for a month and a half, like in the United States. Then I took 2 months off and, you know, all that good stuff.
I don't know. Besides radio and like being a parent now, I don't know what I've done. Besides my radio gig with Steven DC, I've never kept a job for 3 years.
Yeah. Like, I understand that, dude. I look back on certain things that I do now and I go, wow, I've been in the music business since 1994. Like, I look back and go, God, it's almost been 20 years, 2 decades.
Wow.
And it doesn't feel like it because I'm not driving around a Rolls Royce. It just doesn't feel like it. All right. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, smile.amazon.com. That's the website, smile.amazon.com. You go there, you click through that, and then while you're there, you purchase your stuff, and a percentage of it goes to the charity of your choice, and it doesn't cost you any extra. And even though Amazon wasn't very nice to us.
Can you choose the amount?
I'm not sure if you can choose the amount or if it's...
Can you choose the percentage?
I don't think so. I think it's just literally they have a set percentage of every purchase, and then you just choose the charity, and then they send, even if it's 30 cents. Like,
right,
okay,
right, right.
Say you buy yourself a $15 gizmo, right?
Right.
And 30 cents of it is all that they've scheduled out percentage-wise off of their profit base to give to a charity. Still, you're giving 30 cents to a charity. You might not be doing... It's not costing you 30 extra cents.
Right.
It's not $15.30 for you. You just paid the $15 plus shipping.
Amazon is just getting a huge tax break.
Huge tax break.
At the end of the year. That's all they're doing.
That's what they're doing. That's how they're working this out.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
It's big time. It's big boy stuff. Okay. So, let's... you know what?
You want to put what you're getting ready to talk about in the BNN?
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time... And are you ready, Bobby? It's time for BNN.
Welcome to the Bobby News Network. Ladies and gentlemen, this is BNN.
BNN for another week. It's been a few weeks since we've had it on the show, but BNN is back. And Bobby, take it away, sir.
All right, my top story. The New York Post is reporting that the Tips for Jesus mysterious person that has been leaving thousands of dollars in tips at restaurants across the country is Jack Shelby.
Jack Shelby.
Jack Shelby is a venture capitalist and former vice president of PayPal.
Oh, wow. Jack Shelby is the tip master. You know, every year they have the whole gold coins in the red kettles for the Salvation Army and things like that. Who did this? Who was the amazing donor?
Who put the $1,000 in? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so now, but you know what? I don't know if that's a good thing to out these people. Like, I don't think it is. I think it's great. I think it's great that, you know, that there's a human being. And it's great that we can put a name to that human being. But at the same point, that person might not have wanted to be like that. Maybe they were just trying to be selfless and give away some of their fortune.
Right. Aru Dawin, who is a waiter at Bo's Kitchen in New York, confirmed that Shelby and another man and woman had visited the restaurant late Saturday last week.
Okay.
And left a $1,000 tip on a $111 bill. As I was about to drop the check off, one of the men said to me that they would make my night. They called me over, gave me the check, and I was amazed, Darwin told the Post. They took a picture with me and literally, just like that, walked out the door.
Right, but what happened? The picture probably outed him. Because they took a picture with him, you know what I'm saying? And then right. people saw the picture and were like, oh, that's so-and-so.
Yeah. Yep, wow. absolutely. Boxer legend, and I think he's a Hall of Famer now.
Potentially.
Mike Tyson has had to scrap an appearance in London because he is banned from entering Britain.
Why is he banned from entering Britain?
He is banned from entering Britain due to his criminal record.
Oh.
Because Tyson served 3 years in prison for rape, as well as also convictions for assault, cocaine possession, and drinking while driving. Tyson was supposed to have an 8-night British tour in March, but he's not going to be allowed, so the tour will have to be rerouted to Paris, France.
Well, at least they caught it now. Like, probably what happened was they were going through all the skivvies on, you know, like the tour, the route, like his passport, right, all that good stuff, and they have to run that through their system over there, and he probably popped a red flag.
Yep.
Really simple. Ladies and gentlemen, hey, I'm not the biggest purveyor of this by any means whatsoever, because I understand that I think sometimes things get taken out of context and they get applied to people and it's unfair. You know, I don't think that Mike Tyson is going to be going over to London anytime soon to like create riots, start problems, like break into someone's house or anything like that. But at the same point, we have to understand as a society, and the conservatives are really good at telling everybody this, take responsibility for your actions. You have to. And in this case, his actions happened 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
But you got to take responsibility for that.
Yep. So. Well, the suspension of a 6-year-old boy for kissing a girl is raising a lot of questions about whether the peck should be considered sexual harassment. The boy's mother said officials at Lincoln School of Science and Technology in Cannon City, Colorado, which is a population of about 6,000 people, are overreacting.
So who was the one who brought... Go ahead and tell the story.
Her son was suspended once before for kissing a girl and had other disciplinary problems. She was surprised to find out that he would be forced out of school again for multiple days. First grader Hunter Yelton said that his... he has a crush on a girl at school and that she likes him back. It was during class, yes. We were doing reading groups and I leaned over and kissed her on the hand. That's all that happened.
Oh my God. Okay, here, ladies and gentlemen, this is one thing if it's like a 15-year-old girl who goes to the teacher and complains that so-and-so kissed her, and then like the school explains to him, hey, listen, you can't do that. If you do that again, you're a bad person and we're going to have to kick you out of school. It's another thing when it's a 6-year-old kid or a 7-year-old kid who doesn't understand what they're talking about, because it's just a bunch of adults that want to get all antsy-pantsy on some stuff.
Right.
I don't understand it.
Well, also in Colorado, Philip Steele, who is a resident of a city named Deer Trail, Colorado, is ready to fight for the Old West values he feels are being threatened by American U.S. drones.
Whoa.
He asked what exactly he means, or what exactly he's proposing to do when he sees an unmanned aircraft. Steele points his gun at the sky and says, shoot him down. A law is being looked at and potentially put on the books that will allow members of Deer Trail, which is a population of exactly 600 people, whether or not they would be allowed to shoot down and potentially hunt for federal drones.
Why would this even be discussed, ladies and gentlemen? What are you... Listen, okay. All right. Hold on. Bobby, you got to play the game with me. You ready? Here we go. We're going to play the game, ladies and gentlemen. I'm even standing up for this. We're going to play the game, okay?
Okay.
We've got to play this game, all right? All right. Conservatives, right?
Conservatives.
We would assume that this individual, because he's a gun-carrying person who's like, I'm going to shoot at the sky, he's probably conservative-based.
Correct.
I'm not going to say how deep he is. He could be like a whack-job Tea Party person on the right, extreme right, or he could just be just a general moderate conservative-type individual who just likes, you know, the conservative thought process. But it's obvious he's not a liberal.
Correct.
I would be willing to bet he's not a liberal. I'm not going to say that he 100% is not. I could be wrong, but I'm willing to bet he's not a liberal. Okay, now, the number one argument the conservatives had is, we love the free market economy. We love the free market economy, right?
Correct.
Now, he did stipulate what kind of drones he's talking about. If it's Air Force-style drones and military drones, there's a really good chance that he shoots at one of them, they're going to literally come and take him and put him in prison for the rest of his life.
Right.
Like, they're not even going to play, because, dude, it's not about them. Like, they could just be testing drugs. Like, they're not going to go over to Iraq or to England to test unmanned aircraft. They're going to test them, like, Area 51 and out in the desert and over these unpopulated areas, because they want to test the flight patterns and how they work and if they're working right and all this. They're not spying on you, even though technically after everything that this year happened, they could be spying on you. But even then, what are they going to find out? That you decided to dump some coffee out into the front yard while you picked up your morning newspaper?
Right.
Whoop-de-doo. Oh, my goodness. The drones caught me dumping my coffee pot out. Now,
the funny part is, you just said testing sites, is right before this story was released, about a week ago, the federal government released and announced that they are creating 6 new drone testing sites across the country.
And that's their choice. Ladies and gentlemen, they're a part of the United States. We have to test them somewhere before we can go and just send them into other places.
Right.
Because, let's be honest, let's say we didn't test them because we got Culver Stockton City, whatever his name is.
Deer Trail.
Deer Trail. What's his name?
Philip Steele.
We got Philip Steele, who's just this anti-Obama-hating, drone-hating individual.
Right.
He just doesn't want drones being tested at all because obviously they're trying to get us. So then we just don't test our drones. We send them over into Iraq and Afghanistan and all these places where they always want to go to war. Remember?
Right.
The conservatives. We love war. We gotta take the fight to them before they take it to us. That's their argument all the time, right? So we send these untested drones over there. They get shot down, or they like crash into things and they don't work. And the first words out of their mouths will be what? Oh my God, it's the government just wasting our money again.
Yep.
Gosh darn it. They wasted all that money. They're trying to take my guns away, and now they're just taking my tax money and just crashing it in Iraq all over the place.
Yeah.
That's how they think. Now, let's go a step further. If I'm stupid, go ahead, hit me up at the Q Now on Twitter, or at Mark Bland, MarkBland, or go to theqnow.com. We have a contact us page. Click on that bad boy. Send me a message.
Yep.
Tell me how big of a moron I am. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, as well as on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, facebook.com/theqnow. So tell me how big of a moron I am, because you're a big-time conservative lover, okay? What about Amazon? Remember Amazon was testing those drones?
Yeah.
So now here comes these packages flying over Deer Trail.
That's your Christmas gift.
And Philip decides that's another one of them drone aircrafts, and I don't appreciate it. So he starts shooting at this company. Now, the biggest argument from the conservatives is always free market economy. Get what you can while you can. You should have the right as a company to develop and do things to make money in this country. That's what the American pride, right?
America,
there.
Baby.
America. That's American pride. So now Philip and Deer Trail shooting down the free market economy. The guy who's a conservative that owns Amazon is like, yo, dude, I'm just trying to make money. I agree with you. I hate Obama, and I'm all about the free market, and I created this drone thing to make more money. Don't you respect my free market thought? And he's like, no, I hate drones. Listen, they're so dumb. They can't stop fighting with themselves on their own policies.
Yeah,
they
absolutely.
Just can't. Like, literally, I just laid out 2 examples of exactly what would probably happen had those situations gone down that way. I don't know anymore. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for us here on BNN today.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Bobby.
Absolutely.
As usual. We appreciate that. It was good stuff. Let me do this Google thing before we do some game on, game off.
Okay.
A mild-mannered man says his life was completely ruined after Google's autocomplete feature convinced the government he was building a bomb. Though he intended to search the web for how do I build a radio-controlled airplane, Jeffrey Cantor, a government contractor, says the search engine autocompleted his request, turning it into how do I build a radio-controlled bomb. Before he realized Google's error, Cantor had already pressed enter, sparking a chain reaction he says resulted in months of harassment by government officials leading up to his eventual termination. Following the 2009 incident, Cantor says he was under constant surveillance with his every physical and digital move monitored by the government. Well, you are a government contractor, so being a government contractor, they're probably already monitoring every single one of your digital movements.
But what's so funny is he must have put something into Google previously about this, because I just put the exact same thing into Google, and the very first thing that comes up is, how do I create an app, create a Google document, create an event on Facebook?
Okay. Following the 2009 incident, Cantor says he, in a lawsuit filed this week in federal court, Cantor claims he was regularly visited by federal investigators who made threatening and anti-Semitic remarks, which only got worse after he complained to the Anti-Defamation League. Cantor further states the co-workers would also make veiled death threats and appear to have extensive knowledge of Cantor's private life, phone calls, and internet habits. If Cantor ever got angry after his private information was repeated back by slamming a cabinet or typing loudly on his computer, reads Cantor's complaint, the subcontractor CRGT and Northrop Grumman employees would tell the same story about how there was a neighbor in their community who seemed like such a nice guy, but then he went on a murder-suicide. Cantor says he was ultimately pushed out of his position at Appian Corporation, but continued encountering similar harassment when working for other contractors with federal clients. Cantor's lawsuit names a who's who of high-profile defendants, including Attorney General Eric Holder, National Director of Intelligence James Clapper, CIA Director John Brennan, Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel, Secretary of the State John Kerry, and Acting Secretary of Homeland Security Rand Beers, among others.
Wow.
As recompensed for his hardships, Cantor seeks nearly $60 million in damages. He also wants the court to order the government to stop stalking him. I think that this is just... Okay, here I go again. Here I go again. Uh-oh, it's time for Mark to just make assumptions again. I'm going to go out on a small limb, say that this is a government contractor who probably has a history in voting potentially moderate conservative in general. Maybe he's not the biggest Obama fan. Maybe he's not the biggest Clinton fan. Maybe he says the word Reagan a lot, even though he's dead.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's one of those situations where I think this is kind of like the Larry Connors situation here in St. Louis. Like, yeah. Larry Connors, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know this story, because you probably live in other cities, we talked about this a few months ago, but Larry Connors is a news anchor here in the St. Louis area.
Legend.
A legend. He's been around for, God, since the 70s.
Yeah.
In the St. Louis area, and he's well known. Well, evidently, Larry Connors has this incredibly bad history of not paying his taxes.
Uh-huh.
Makes a lot of money for the CBS affiliate when he was working there, and just didn't pay his taxes on certain years. Okay, so he does an interview with Barack Obama, President of the United States, and asks some questions. And those questions were some edgy questions, but no more or less edgy than CNN or anybody else asks Barack Obama in certain interviews. Right. So then what happens is all of a sudden the IRS starts surveilling him, he said. And started, like, when all that stuff earlier this year came out about the IRS situation and they were going after conservative groups and people like that, uh-huh. He jumped on the bandwagon immediately and said, because he asked these questions of Barack Obama, he sucked the, like, he's, you know, he put the IRS onto him.
Right.
To, like, come after him and, like, try to take him down because he had a conservative opinion of Barack, of life.
Uh-huh.
And Barack Obama was against that. So... But that wasn't the case. See, the case was he just didn't pay his back taxes, and the IRS doesn't like people that don't pay their back taxes. They go after him regardless. It's not because you did a Barack Obama interview and you happen to be conservative. He wanted it to be that way. I think that that's what we have here. We have a situation where this individual might have made some mistakes, maybe has a certain type of an opinion, speaks it out loud to people and around certain individuals.
Right.
And, of course, that leads to other people saying so-and-so, you know, he's not the biggest blah, 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 blah. And before you know it, it starts moving up the chains a little bit.
Yeah.
And maybe he did start to catch a little harassment, but he probably wasn't catching it from Eric Holder, the attorney general. He wasn't.
Yeah,
John. I guarantee you this. John Kerry doesn't know his name. And it says that he's in the lawsuit.
Do you think? Well, maybe he worked for Northrop Grumman.
Yeah.
So maybe the Homeland Security, you know.
But John Kerry, Secretary of State, does not know who this dude is.
No.
He has no clue.
Crazy.
He has no clue.
Okay,
so, all right, it's time for Game On, Game Off.
Real quick, before we do Game On, Game Off,
okay.
Can you hit up that Walmart story real quick? Because that is hilarious.
How about we do that in overtime?
Okay, let's do that in overtime.
We'll do that in overtime. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for us to do Game On, Game Off. By the way, overtime happens right as soon as this show is over with. You just stick through the end little song that we got there,
yeah.
You know, our theme song, and then right after it, it goes right into overtime.
Absolutely.
Which we've been starting with Epic Battles of Rap. Which we might do again. I'm not sure. But, all right. So, here's the situation. Bobby, I'm going to go first this week.
Okay.
I'm going to do my game off first.
Okay.
Game off trying to be antisocial on purpose. I had a conversation with some individuals recently. And basically, these are individuals who have a certain preference in life. And their thing is to tell everybody about how they're an angry person and that they're a bitch or they're an a-hole or they're this or that. You know what I'm saying? And that they're, you know, they're just badasses and you're never going to get one up on them. And they're antisocial and they've been around the block a few times. So you need to deal with it. I got to deal with nothing.
That's called being allergic to bull crap.
Yeah, that's what that was. That was me coughing up the bull crap you just threw in my face. You're just trying to be antisocial because you still think it matters, and everyone just looks at you like a 40, 50, 60-year-old idiot. That's what it really comes down to.
Boom.
Boom. Sorry. You just look like a moron in people's eyes. I'm not trying to be rude. I'm just saying. Game on! The two documentaries that I'm going to put on. Game on. These could have, you know, they've been around for a while, but I just rewatched them the other day for the first time in a few years and loved them again. King of Kong.
Never seen that.
And Chasing Ghosts. Both of these are about the video game boom of the early 1980s, and King of Kong is actually about the longstanding Donkey Kong record holder and how he is this guy named Billy who's down, who lives, like, he's real famous. Billy's in both of these movies. Chasing Ghosts is about the video game world championships they used to hold back in the early 1980s, back when Pac-Man was the big deal and all that.
Uh-huh.
King of Kong is about the longstanding Donkey Kong record that was on thing, and a guy a few years ago, like 2005, 2006, decided he was going to go buy a Donkey Kong game and he really wanted to become the world record holder. And so he went out of his way.
And
this is the story of him trying to become the world record holder in Donkey Kong. And literally, dude, I'm not going to give away too much here, but how backstabbing and serious these people who've had these records for 20 plus years, 30 plus years, how backstabbing they go out of their way to try to stop him from achieving his goal. Like, it is ridiculous. They have certain individuals that are in place that are supposed to, like, you know, mark this down on the record books of whether it's good or bad and, like, whether this counts or it doesn't count. And these guys have been friends with these guys since the video game championships back in the early 80s when these records were set.
Uh-huh.
And so
they're,
like,
trying to, like,
so this guy's in their back pocket, so they're friends for, like, 30 plus years.
Yeah.
And so they're like, yo, you know, you heard about that dude who's trying to do this. Well, you're the guy who's got to go and, you know, authenticate this, right? Well, when you get there, you make sure you check this and you check that and you check that. To the point where they try to break in this dude's garage when he's at work to, like, rig the machine to break so that he couldn't win the record. Like,
wow.
It gets serious. Let me tell you something. King of Kong, one of the best documentaries of all time. All right, we only got a minute and a half left. Go. Game on.
Okay, Game On is a new artist by the name of Cassidy Pope.
Okay.
She is a great singer. She was on The Voice, and she won The Voice 2 years ago.
Okay.
She's just incredible. She has a great song right now called Wasting All These Tears, and actually I think that's what we'll start overtime with.
Okay, we'll start overtime with that.
And then Game Off. Game Off, Taylor Swift.
You're done with her.
Taylor Swift. Okay, so I was watching the Victoria's Secret fashion show the other night. Taylor Swift played two different songs, and I thought it was the same damn song.
Okay.
I can't tell her music apart. She's annoying, but she is really cute. I'll give her that.
What it comes down to with Taylor Swift, and I'm not against Taylor Swift. I've met Taylor, actually. I met Taylor about a year and a half before she became famous.
I did, too.
Yeah, I met her down in Nashville at the CRS show in 2007.
I met her here in St. Louis.
And she was a really sweet girl. She was really cool. But the thing with Taylor is I think it's time for Taylor to take a break. I think that for literally the last five solid years of her life, it has been nothing but big hit songs and touring and big hit songs and touring and big hit songs and touring. And now maybe it's like, I understand the whole purpose of the music industry is to, hey, while we've got a hot wave running, ride that bad boy as far as we can.
Right.
And I understand that and I get it. But at a certain point, when does the artist side of you kick in and make you go, I need some downtime. I need some me time. I need to go and relax for a couple of years and find a center so I can start recreating new content that's interesting, that is where I am in my head right now.
Well, she's a great songwriter, but she's just over the top. It's only the same beat, and it's always the same. She has a lot of number one hits from songwriting.
All right.
So go back to songwriting.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break. The show's over. We had so much to pack into the show. We didn't even get to any of the questions, the letters, the listeners. We've got an overtime that's going to be exciting for you to listen to. Make sure you check out RadioFubar.com and Tap Detroit every single week to go to their respective schedules pages to find out when the queue is replaying. Also, thank you to 1280 AM KYRO and 1420 WINI for syndicating and playing our show throughout the Midwest every single week. Thank you so much to them. Also, Bobby, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Absolutely.
Appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, please check out theqnow.com. Old episodes, new episodes, all that good stuff. And, hey, you know, we only got another show left before the end of the year. Maybe it's time for us to do a best of. We will talk about that more in overtime. That's going to do it for us. We will see you guys next time on the show.
Solutions left, but on God. Trying to block my shots just ain't gonna happen, so don't try. Every time I get on this microphone, I like to spit. And get hit up after hit. This chemistry is so legit. I can't be quipped like a prophylactic. Now they riding dicks.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Overtime. Cassidy Pope. That was your game on this week.
Game on. I love this.
She's got a great voice.
She just released her first album.
There it is. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Overtime. This is where we kind of take the gloves off a little bit. You know, we relax a little bit. We kind of kick back. Handle some letters from the listeners.
Absolutely.
Talk a little bit about some advice.
And talk about our big event coming up.
Oh, we do have a big event coming up, ladies and gentlemen. Perfect segue, actually. Thank you so much for reminding me. This Tuesday, December 17th, at Allskate in Des Moines, Illinois.
Yep.
That's 6 to 8 p.m. $2 to get in, $2 for skates. Last week, Mike Barcells, the station general manager of 1420 WINI, called me up
in Des Moines, Illinois.
Call me out. To basically tell me that he doesn't appreciate that liberal... He's got to deal with one liberal all week on his radio station.
Right.
He doesn't like the fact that that I go around saying some of the things that I say because it's a little too much. It's too many nails in the coffin.
Right.
Is what it is for him, Bobby. And so he called me up to say that those good, wholesome, conservative middle Americans, they're going to get themselves a treat when he destroys me in a one-on-one race.
Boo.
For the Patriots Cup down there in Des Moines, Illinois.
Terrible.
I don't think you Southern idiots understand what's going on here.
Uh-oh.
I'm a moderate, so I pull the best of the conservative side and the best of the liberal side. I'm the hybrid. I'm the T-2000. Now, you understand the T-1000 defeated the T-2000.
Yeah.
I get it. But that dude was badass. Like, he turned into liquid metal.
Yeah,
he was
yeah.
just rolling through crap. He was a tough dude.
He was a beast.
He was a beast. And that's what I am. I'm a radio messiah. I'm a radio beast. In fact, that should be my new name, the radio messiah. It's literally an issue for me when I've got somebody who I give great... Listen, I'm trying to educate you people.
Yeah.
You people in Southern Illinois.
We drop you with knowledge.
We hit you with knowledge. Up here in the big city, where things are better.
The lights are brighter.
The lights are brighter. We have real base. You love our baseball teams. I don't yeah. come to Des Moines for anything. I don't come down to Southern Illinois cheering for anything from
maybe
Southern
Illinois. Maybe a fried Oreo.
Maybe a fried Oreo. That's about it. At the real state fair that's not in Des Moines anymore.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that ain't happening. So, listen, I have the big city behind me. And up here, we're a little smarter. And calling someone like me out is like tugging on God's cape, bro.
Yeah.
Like you don't, or Superman's cape.
Yeah.
But either one. You don't tug on God's cloak. You don't Superman's cape.
We are your kryptonite.
We're going to destroy you. And I'm going to take that Patriots Cup and I'm going to bring it home with me. But I'm going to shove it right in front of Mike Barcells' face.
Can't wait to have a drink out of it.
Real nice and big.
I want to have a drink like the Stanley Cup.
You want to drink out of it like that? Bobby, that
can
will be it.
Can I bathe my child?
If you win the Patriots Cup, if we win the Patriots Cup, because Bobby will be there with me
yeah.
to cheer me on as my only cheer. I don't even, listen, we I are so dominating at what we do in the big city up here where all the smart liberals and moderates live, okay? Yeah. That I don't even need a whole cheering section. I just need one Bobby to equate for the entire city.
Absolutely.
One Bobby is equal to your entire town coming out, and it's only $2 to get in, and it's only $2 to get skates.
Because I'm pretty
sure... And you can skate around. I'm not... Listen. I ain't skating with any of you people. Any of you low people on the totem pole.
I'm not skating. I'm better than that.
Yeah, I'm not better than skating. I'm going to destroy Mike Barcells in the skating ring. I'm not going to step out there with you people. I don't have time for that.
What's your town population? Like 50?
Bobby, you're the equation of 50 people. You're what? Like, listen, yeah. all 50. All 50 will be there. They will be excited. I'm telling you.
I can't wait for this.
They have no idea. Anyway, let's move on. That's going to be December 17th, Des Moines, Illinois at Allskate, 6 to 8 p.m. $2 to get in and $2 for skates to watch me that liberal hybrid conservative lover, Mark Bland, walk into
wipe
your town.
The floor.
Yeah, wipe the floor. The Radio Messiah, come wipe the floor down there. And take the 1420 WINI Patriots Cup with me.
Oh,
real
yeah.
simple. All right, so...
Walmart.
Talk about it. Do you want me to read it?
Yeah, so this... Well, you can read the full story, but this story is hilarious.
All right, off the air, me and Bobby were talking a little bit about the fact that price matching saved me a bunch of money for Christmas gift shopping the other day.
Yeah.
Check this out. Joe Cantrell says he faces charges after trying to take advantage of a retailer's policy. A disabled former professional wrestler was banned for life from Walmart.
Damn this story.
for ad matching, one of the retailer's proudest traditions. Joe Cantrell made a hobby out of browsing local ads, going to Walmart to get the cheapest prices for his products through ad matching, according to television station WXYZ. What a beautiful
Are
station.
Are you shitting me?
WXYZ. Look that shit up. I bet you that's real. However, last week, Cantrell took a trip to Walmart's Santan Valley, Arizona location where an employee stopped him and told him he wasn't allowed to ad match. Cantrell got upset and complained to management. Upon his return trip 4 days later, he was placed in handcuffs by local law enforcement. When I left, he turned around and called the Pinal County Sheriff's Office and said he felt intimidated and threatened, Cantrell told WXYZ. I was upset, but never once did I say anything to that gentleman. The former wrestler says he was handcuffed, humiliated, and embarrassed in front of everybody at Walmart, but the deputies quickly released him. The customer was released by the cops, who Cantrell was not a threat. Nevertheless, he says he's facing charges of threatening, intimidation, and disorderly conduct. On top of all that, he will no longer be able to pursue his hobby. Cantrell has been slapped with a lifetime ban from Walmart. The ban is baffling when you consider the retailer says about ad matching on its official website. We're committed to providing low prices every day on everything. So if you find a lower advertised price on an identical product, tell us and we'll match it right at the register. Walmart sent ABC 15 the following statement Tuesday. We make every effort to make sure our customers have a good experience in our stores. As in previous situations, we attempt to work with this customer. However, in this situation, the associate felt unsafe, and so we contacted law enforcement. Oh. We are continuing to cooperate with law enforcement on their investigation.
Where did it say the guy was from? Because WXYZ Action News
is in Arizona.
Okay, well,
Santan Valley, Arizona.
This is saying that WXYZ Action News
yes.
is out of Detroit, Michigan.
It's very possible. You know, they might have picked the story up.
Holy shit.
The story might have gotten up to Detroit, yeah, right, and that's right. how it became popular.
But that's where WXYZ is from. But are you shitting me? You're going to, based upon your policies, tell this customer that... oh, my God. Banned for life.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is what it's like in these small conservative towns like Des Moines, Illinois, when they run the Walmart.
To be butthurt
yeah,
about everything.
Butthurt about everything. And when a guy comes in who just wants to do some ad matching, they want to kick him out of the store. That's why you need people like me to come down there and destroy people and take their Patriot Cups away from them. Okay?
Put them in line.
Put them in line. You need to get in line, ladies and gentlemen. You need to get in line. All right, I'm enough with that. Hey, I've got my Mark Bland list of 2013. These are the things that I think were huge that we needed to remember from 2013.
Okay.
Now, of course, we've only got a couple more shows left for this year, and I'm assuming that those two shows are probably going to be some shows where we talk about some best ofs and things like that.
Right.
But this is my quick list. Okay, let's see. We'll see how many of these things over the next few weeks fall on everybody else's list.
Is this a top 10, correct?
Seven, actually. It's just seven.
Okay.
These are just my things that I'm taking from 2013 with me that I remember. Okay.
Okay.
Could you do something for me?
Sure.
Could you be up all night to get lucky with me?
Yes.
All right. So, Miley Cyrus is number one on my list. Miley Cyrus had a huge year. She basically reinvented herself, stomped in with her 23s, with her J's, into the middle of the situation on a wrecking ball. And she was by far the biggest, most controversial media situation that they dealt with. Like, we had some Amanda Bynes stuff earlier in the year. We really didn't have any Paris Hilton, Kim Kardashian stuff too much. I mean, Kim Kardashian did have a baby. That was a big deal. But beyond that, Miley Cyrus was the it girl in Hollywood when it came to craziness and stories and media and social media and all that. It was all Miley this year.
Paris Hilton's fallen away.
Yeah,
she's
gone.
About that.
But I'm just saying, Miley Cyrus was the it girl. Number two on my list. Number two on my list, well, it's the return of this stuff. That's right, electro disco is back, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. Little Get Lucky action right there. Pharrell, Daft Punk. Can't forget the song Blurred Lines. Basically,
yeah.
Disco dance music made its return this year in a grand fashion earlier this summer, and it literally ran out throughout the summer. And I would say, in my opinion, this song and Blurred Lines were the biggest songs of the summer. Everybody tried to say that
Blurred Lines was the biggest.
Everybody tried to say that it was Nelly and that Cruise song, but I'm like, no. Yeah. This song right here and Blurred Lines, by far, were the two biggest songs of the year. By far.
That Cruise song was pretty big, but you can't say that Blurred Lines was not a huge song because a multi-million dollar company, and by company, I mean my other employer, Radio Shack, played Blurred Lines as their like theme song when we reinvented our stores over this year.
Yeah.
When we reinvented ourselves this year, this is what played.
Hey, everybody get up. Oh, here we go. Hey, hey, hey. Mike Parcells. I'm coming to the coin. Gonna take that cup. Beat that ass. Gonna race that ass.
If you can't read from the same page, maybe I'm going dead.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I'm going
dead. That's what I'm talking about right there.
Maybe I'm out of
the return of electro disco, man. That's it. That is the song style that basically took over this year, and you're going to hear a lot more of it. There's an album. I can't remember that. I want to say something orange, Burnt Orange or something like that is the name of an artist who has an entire album that they're claiming, even though it came out later in the year, is like one of the top 10 albums of the entire year. You and me don't even know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? Like, I heard this in passing on a list from somebody else, and I was like, who's this? And I went and checked out a couple songs, and it was really good. Like, it's really good. And the whole album's this style of music, and I'm telling you, it's just coming back big time. Number three on my list is the Get Up on This podcast with Jensen Karp and Matty Boom Boom. Matt Robinson over there on the Smodcast Network. That's right, Sir Network. We had Jensen Karp come on to our show earlier this year, and it was one of our favorite episodes. It was a great episode, and we did some Get Up on This with him. This is a great show everybody needs to check out. This guy, him and his partner, they basically pick out things that you need, kind of like how we do Game Up, Game Off, but our Game Up, Game Off is a little bit more like shoot from the hip type things that we don't like, you know, things that kind of just come and pass it. These guys do some real serious research, and they find like those trending things that are just bubbling right below the surface, and they're getting ready to break through and be huge within the next few months, and they're really good at it. And they're a great podcast, and I wish everybody would go check out Jensen Karp and Matt Robinson on Get Up on This on the Smodcast.com network.
Yep.
Okay. Number four, the healthcare discussion. I'm going to take away a lot of healthcare talk this year, man.
Yeah.
You know, let me tell you something. Last year was an election year. A lot of hatred towards Obama. There was a lot of talk between Mitt Romney and Obama because who was going to win presidency of the United States. And, of course, hosting a political radio show, ladies and gentlemen, that can get very daunting. That can get very daunting where every single week I had to defend Obama or I had to defend Mitt Romney or be against Obama or be against Mitt Romney, which in the end, I chose the winner. Travis Cook chose the loser. He chooses losers. I choose winners. Barack Obama won. Like, when it came down to it, you know, I had a gentleman on my show named Travis Cook, reputed Tea Party lover, basically explained to me that Obama's done. He's done, killed himself off. It's ridiculous. It's over with. Mitt Romney's got this laced up. Nope. That's not how it happened. Jamie Allman at 97.1 FM News Talk here in St. Louis said the same thing. Nope, you were wrong too. I don't get paid as much as you, and I was right. I should get your paycheck for knowing how to decipher information about radio, politics, and things like that in general.
Yeah.
I agree. I don't think that's fair. You get on there, spew a bunch of crap nobody cares about, and you're wrong about everything, including who is eventually going to be the winner, because you just really want it to be that way, which I understand. You're gonna defend your guy, but at the same point, you got it wrong. I got it right. I give people right information. That's just the way it works.
Yep.
But unfortunately, nice guys finish last in this world.
Unfortunately.
That's how it is. Number five. The addition of Producer Bobby!
Yeah!
Producer Bobby joined our show late in the year, and he has been nothing but a godsend ever since. Thank you so much for being a part of the Q, Bobby.
I appreciate you allowing me to be part of this
juggernaut of mediocrity.
This amazing spaceship.
Yeah, that's what this is.
That will blast off into amazingness.
Number six is a unique one. It started last year, but this year it almost became this mainstream, it's okay to be this thing, and I hate it. The hipster explosion. Hipsters. You know what I'm talking about? Your Arcade Fire, Mumford & Sons. I want to dress like a... Listen. Do you think people in the 1930s were dressing like they were cowboys from the 1870s? No, they weren't. They weren't doing that. That wasn't their lifestyle. There was nobody in the 1930s that was like, you know what would be really cool? Unless it was Halloween. They were like, you know, I just really feel like an 1880s soul. Like I live on the range. You know what I'm saying? And,
yeah.
And I'm going to... You know, take 10 paces, turn and shoot on people. Like, that's just my thing.
Wes.
Find me pictures of people from the 1930s wearing dusters that lived in the city. Walking around with dusters and like carrying cowbells hanging from the side of their like that's how people in the 1880s dressed, and that was their life at that time. And to equate what I'm talking about, it's 2013 and you dress like you're a 1930s range liver, like you live in the Dust Bowl in the 1930s, and you got banjos, and you always got your cuffed like kicks on, and this, that, and the other, and like all the women, all the hipster women, their thing is that they want to be like the tough, strong girl from the pictures from World War II. You know, they got the weird bun thing going on in the front of their hair with the band,
the Molly,
whatever it is, it doesn't matter. And then she's got her fist up with the like fake tattoo on the arm. It's like American made by women, you know, type thing. It's like, you're walking around every day dressed like that in 2013, and those people did that because that was their time period. But in the 1960s, no one was walking around dressed like that,
right,
talking about how cool that was in the mid-1930s. Okay?
Right.
Do you understand? Just live in your time period. Just live in your time period. That's all I'm asking. Like, oh, man, you know what? I picked up an 8-track player the other day. It's so sweet. You're an idiot.
Yeah.
If you got one because you had one in your persons as you were growing up in your house, and your mom and dad had one because back in the 70s, they grew up on 8-track stuff, so they had 8-tracks, and then you had to get it from them because they hand it to you and give it to you and they pass it down, that's one thing. If you're going out of your way to get, oh, man, check out this sweet system I got. It's a 1979 Pioneer system. Look, it just started with stereo for the first time. It's got 2 channels of stereo. Whoa. And then I hooked up. Like, no, you're not cool.
We have kids that come into Radio Shack all the time who will be like, do you guys have any cassette tapes?
No, yeah.
No, no, why?
No one's got, no, because it's the thing, man. Cassette tapes, that's where it's at.
Vintage.
Everybody
really cool.
Hates their lives now so much, they can't wait to try to dress like, look like, and feel like people from the past, and that is bad for society. I don't care what anybody out there says.
Yeah.
That's bad for society. Because 30 years from now, you're going to look back on 2013 and you're going to be like, yeah, everybody dressed like they were from the 1930s. Or everybody tried to dress like they were an 80s teenager.
We can't define ourselves.
Yeah, well, you don't define yourselves. You let life happen.
But I'm
we're a technological society. The things that we, like, listen, ladies and gentlemen, this is the equivalent of if in 2035, many years from now, 2035, right, there is this resurgence of people wanting to use Sidekicks from the early 2000s with no service on them. Do you see my point? They'd be like, having the Sidekick is the thing, man. It's like, it's 2013 and that stuff's like 9 years old. We don't use it anymore. And you're going to try to use it in 2035 and try to be like, just be the identity of who you are, where you're at in your time period now.
I knew somebody in 2010 who thought that was still the coolest shit in the world.
I don't understand people. Like, we have a life. Live your life. Be a part of the time period you're in. Don't try to dress from the 1930s because you're like, oh, I'm an old soul. But you're not an old soul. You're 23 years old and you work at a coffee place.
Right.
Stop it. Enjoy the music from a Colby Calais. Enjoy the music. I don't mind if you enjoy the music from a Mumford & Sons or an Arcade Fire and some of these groups like that. But this whole, it's a lifestyle thing. Shut up. Those lifestyles are dead. That's why they didn't continue to do them into the 40s and the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. And we didn't dress like that in the 80s.
Right.
I love the fact that when I was growing up in the 80s, we had the pop culture renaissance that we did and the Michael Jackson zipper jackets and things like that. Like, that was our identity at that time.
I wish I lived in the 80s. The 80s just seemed like awesome.
The 90s were cool, too. That was our time, you know? We were a lot more dancey in the 1990s. Like, that's who we were.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, it was just like, oh, it's all got to be throwback, man. We got to go back to those times. And it's like, no, we don't. Try to make do with what you got now. Do you realize you think 2013 is horrible? And I'm going to be the first to tell you, 2013 was not a great year for me by any means whatsoever. It was a pretty rough year all the way around. Yet, at the same point, I'm not trying to go back and relive 1997 over again.
Right.
You know, this is who we are now. Just be happy with where, like,
live in the moment.
In 2013, your life isn't even as rough as a person from the Dust Bowl in 1929. Those people had horse-drawn carriages with all of their freaking furniture and their whole lives.
People were dying of smallpox.
Yeah, in the middle of deserts, they were living in sections of Oklahoma that were Dust Bowl. That's what they called the Dust Bowl, where sandstorms had taken over, and they had sweltering heat and horrible. Just it was
because of
a
drought.
Drought, and it was just like they lived in these like shanty towns. Because they lost all their money from the stock market crash of 1929, and the Great Depression was happening. Your life is better than that.
We may have had an economic crisis, but I'm pretty sure we're doing pretty well.
Yeah, we're doing great in comparison to those people then.
Right.
Absolutely. And those people, I guarantee you, your great-grandma, she would never want to go back to that again in her life.
Ever.
She was not a happy person.
That's why she's
sitting on a prairie. In the 19th, like, ladies and gentlemen, do you understand what I'm saying? This isn't 1880s. This is the 1930s I'm talking about. We have skyscrapers.
Right.
Charles Lindbergh has already gotten into a plane and tried to cross the Atlantic. Like, we have technologically advanced by the 1930s to where we have machine guns and all kinds of, and cars. Cars are a typical thing.
Now, yes.
In the 1930s.
Yeah, now, at that point.
They were a typical thing, and these people ended up having to go so far back into time because they were forced out of their lives that they had to live on a prairie in a sand bowl.
Women are starting at this point to be able to work jobs.
We forget how advanced those years were in comparison to, 1890. Like, 40 years down the road. They had advanced so much, and they still, when the Depression hit, it literally sent them back to the way people lived in the late 1800s because they couldn't afford anything. Now we hit a bump in the road like that, and we're not living like it's 1939 Dust Bowl.
Right.
None of us are living on the street. Some of us are, but not all of us.
Right.
All right. My last thing, Harlem Shake. Number 7, Harlem Shake.
Do the Harlem Shake.
That's right, baby. Harlem Shake was huge at the beginning of the year. It's probably by far the biggest internet thing of 2013. I would say that the Harlem Shake was the biggest viral internet thing of 2013. Whereas you could say that last year, and people forget this, last year it was Gangnam Style, Psy, with his Gangnam Style song. That was the biggest thing. I mean, the dude broke, what was it, billion? Was it a billion views on YouTube?
Yeah. A billion views.
Frame by frame, the debut.
So, it's like crazy. Like every year where there's going to be one viral social media thing, Harlem Shake was it this year. By far. So, all right. I got some questions. We're not going to get to any advice this week. I got some questions I want to do here before we get out of here. You okay?
Yeah.
All right. Bobby.
Yes.
Can you be Dr. Love today?
Sure.
All right. Today is my 26th birthday, Mark. We were just married in July. My husband called me yesterday making sure I didn't spend much money on groceries because he just took $100 out of our bank account. Excited, I began thinking what surprises he had in store for my birthday. He got me a $10 cookbook and used the rest to get himself a half an ounce of weed. I got him a PS4 the day it came out, just because. I know the stuff he wants, and that's what I get him, and he's always ecstatic. I tell him what I want, and he always gets me random cheap crap I don't want or need. He says it's more important to give gifts than to receive, and I should appreciate what made him happy to get for me. I don't even know what to do at this point. I just want this pretty wire-wrapped pendant necklace and some flowers. What should I do?
All right. So the biggest thing is he spent $90 on pot.
Yeah.
Evidently, that is called an addiction, which people say you can't get addicted to marijuana.
Sounds to me like he's just getting...
You can.
Sounds like me. He's got a person who's jacking him for his money.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like for me.
But $90 to spend on pot, okay? First off, he's not invested in your future if he's spending $90 on marijuana. He's not invested in children that you potentially will have down the road. He's invested in himself. So I know you said you just got married, but you might have to reassess this situation because his priorities, A, are not in the right place. So you may have to change a few things.
All right.
When I had kids, you know, I hate to say it, but before I had kids, I did, you know, I did drugs. But as soon as I found out I was having kids, that instantly stopped because your priorities change. When you get married, your priorities change. It's now your wife
and your
family.
I think your husband's just cheap, and I just think you need to stop buying him nice gifts. That's what especially it comes down to. Like, if he complains about it, and he's like, what was this? Like, and he, like, gets very dismissive with whatever gift you give him. You go, yeah, well, you know, that's how I felt when you gave me the $10 cookbook for my birthday. Go screw yourself. And just leave it at that. You're absolutely married. It's going to cost him more to divorce you than it is to kind of argue with you. So, all right, here's some questions, and then we're going to get out of here.
Okay.
What did you do as a kid that seemed normal, but looking back was extremely weird?
Ate boogers.
That's what kids do. That doesn't seem extremely weird. Was there anything, like, I'll tell you the weird one for me, although it kind of played out pretty well for my whole life because I eventually got into radio and broadcasting.
Uh-huh.
You ready for this? And this is going to be really wild. I hate to admit this one on the air. And I still have some tapes of this, actually. I used to take a tape recorder with me into the bathroom when I would poop, when I would use the restroom, and I would do news broadcasts.
While you pooped?
Yeah. I would just do news broadcasts. Like, I'd
That's
make,
pretty awesome,
I'd
though.
I'd make stuff up and just, like, record it so that I could play it back and listen to me talking.
That is so awesome.
Now, it was when I was using the restroom, of course, because I had some downtime. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was kind of odd, and it's weird. You know, like, to me, it seemed normal. Like, it was just like, oh, I got nothing to do, so I'm in the bathroom. I'm going to do this. It seems cool. Looking back, it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird to be the guy who's, like, talking to yourself in the bathroom to a tape recorder while you're pooping.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But, you know, what was it going to do? I was 8 years old, 9 years old. That's just life back then.
But it's pretty cool. I like it, though.
What about you?
I'd say I had a weird, like, infatuation with stamps.
Okay.
At the age of, like, 6 and 7. Like, anytime I would get my parents or somebody would get letters, I'd go in and, like, rip the stamps off. It never you know, did anything because, you know, I could have saved that collection and eventually had money from it, but everybody else used to make fun of me because they were collecting, like, normal stuff, like baseball cards.
Right. And yours stuff like stamps. That.
And I was collecting stamps.
All right, fair enough. Last one, okay?
Okay.
What is your most unusual shower habit? What is the thing you do in the shower that is the weirdest? I know what mine is.
What?
I brush my teeth in the shower.
Okay.
Now, it's not unheard of. But everybody's kind of, whenever I tell people that, and that's not something they go around just telling everyone, but, like, they get kind of, some people get weirded out by it, and they're like, oh, that's gross, and that's disgusting, and I just don't understand, because I'm just like, okay, well, first off, my toothbrush is never anywhere near anything bad.
Right.
And on top of it, when I spit the stuff out, it's just going down the drain into the same pipes that it would go to if it was spitting it out into the sink right next to the shower. So, like, I don't see anything. Plus, I've got water pulsating and shooting all over me with soap and, like, it's like, it's not like I can't clean off and be good if something went haywire.
Horribly wrong.
Yeah, and it never does.
Oh my God.
Which I could, though, teeth. I could totally see, like, the toothbrush hitting the ground, I slip on accidentally, land
Bam!
Ass first onto the toothbrush, and it just shoves straight up my ass on accidentally. That would be weird.
The weirdest thing I think I do is I pee in the shower.
You pee in the shower?
Doesn't matter.
But that's a guy thing. Guys just do that. I don't know. Honestly, that would be a really interesting question. Ladies, if you are following, or any ladies out there are listening to this show, at the Q now, at the Q now, TheQNOW on Twitter, or hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/TheQNow. Tell us, women, like, I'm sure you have Do you pee in the showers? Do women ever pee in the shower? I'm sure, like, of course, in the history of our history,
right?
Women have peed in the showers. That's not unheard of.
Is it a normal occurrence?
Is this a normal? Do women pee? Because guys pee in the shower all the time. Like, this is a very typical, like I always try to use the restroom before I get into the shower. But there's times where, like, you know, you just get into the shower, and then halfway through the shower, you're like, oh, I gotta go pee because of the warm water, and it feels
good.
So you just pee in the shower. That happens.
Do it no matter what. I don't even try to go beforehand.
All right, you got some music to take me out of here on? All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for us here on The Q Overtime. I really do appreciate it.
I just want to let you know, this is by a new artist called A Great Big World featuring Christina Aguilera. It's called Say Something. This is a great song.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for us. Make sure you check out theqnow.com.
Say something, I'm giving up on
you. Well, I will. Check out theqnow.com. Old episodes, new episodes, and all that. We will see you guys next time on the show. Thank you for listening.
I'll be the one if you want me to.